Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, can you hear me now? This is Noel with the Bunker Report, the live edition of the Bunker Report. I hope that everybody can hear me now. We're experiencing some technical difficulties here. Let's see. I wonder if we're getting anywhere. Can anybody reply here that they hear me in the chat room? Seeing nothing on my switchboard. Anybody hear me? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Getting nothing. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know. I mean, do I continue to talk or not? Well, I hope somebody out there can hear me. I really do. I assume maybe the show's even being recorded somewhere. But I'm not seeing anything. I don't know what's going on. Try again. Aha. Maybe we're getting somewhere now. Hold on now.
Hey, Bubba. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, man. Hey, you're cool. You're coming out. Everybody can hear you. What is your is your chat room crashed or what?
Yeah, it's crashed like every time I tried to bring it up.
Okay, try it again now. I'm in as the co-host, so you're all hooked up and everybody hears you fine.
Are you hearing me?
As a matter of fact, I'm echoing in the background because my speakers are up. So yeah, I just wanted to let you know that folks can hear you. And that they're definitely hanging out, waiting for the Bunker Report. So I'm going to start dropping the link in for those folks that don't have sound. And, well, thank you for showing up. We had someone hijack last week, so we had to switch some things around. I'm glad you got in okay.
Yeah, I just came in the door just now. I was working kind of late tonight, and I'm like, whoa. And then I don't know what it is. I think it's crashed on me a couple times or been a little funny. But, okay, if you can hear me, we're good then.
Yeah, we're good. So I'm gonna go ahead and sign off. And after saying, well, thank you for being here. And anytime if you're gonna be late or anything, just let me know, man, and I'll get it all up and running for you.
Okay.
All right, my man.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you. Bye, everybody out there at Freedomizer.
Okay. Well, here we are. Again, this is a live edition of the Bunker Report. You know how live shows are. Guys, anything goes, guys. Anything can happen. Apparently the show was, the way I understand it, was hacked at some point in time last week. It's been interesting. It's been very interesting. Okay, look, let's start off by a little ad here, and then we'll get right back into a show. Stand by.
Hey, Freedomizers. Freedomizer Radio and Dehydrate2Store.com have teamed up to give you an Excalibur dehydrator giveaway. Go to www.dehydrate2store.com, that is dehydrate2store.com, and fill out the entry. One lucky listener will win an Excalibur food dehydrator on April 1st. The winner will be announced live on April 1st on air during the Proof Negative show, which is 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., that is West Coast time, that is 9 p.m. to midnight on the East Coast. So sign up today by going to www.dehydrate2store.com.
Okay, I'm back. This is Noel, Bunker Report Bubba. You can call me Noel, you can call me Bubba, you can call me Mr. Phelps, you can call me anybody you want to. Just don't call me late for dinner. I am suffering from a little bit of an ailment today, so if you all please forgive that, and if I sound a little hoarse, I apologize for that, but we'll muddle through this show together, as always. Look, Doc put out a really good video yesterday or the other day, and I want to sort of refer you to that, because that's sort of direction I want to take today, and, you know, I'll tell you, it was an article in Business Week, okay, a Bloomberg article. I'll read the headlines. If you go to my YouTube page or Doc's page, you know, you can see what he said, and he's right. I mean, here it is, in your face. Failed banks may get pension fund backing as FDIC seeks cash. Now, look, guys, what have we told you? I mean, for years and years, I know. You know, you can look at this. You can look at these things and think that we're completely insane. I mean, so many people have told you about different events that have transpired, and yet most of you don't believe it. Well, let me kind of – Doc put it best in his video. He really did. And actually, when he read the part that just – I just fell off the chair I was sitting in. The way they worded this – I mean, I shouldn't laugh about this, but the way they worded this was so funny. Because this is how they explain things to the American people. They just listen. The FDIC, I quote, this is a quote now. The FDIC is constantly looking at structures where it can get the greatest opportunity to tap into capital that we have not had the success reaching through previous deposition methods. I mean, it's just, in other words, we're broke and we've got to get the capital. And in other ways, what we're going to do is we're going to come get your pension funds. Haven't we told you this, fellow patriots? Have we not explained this to you over the years? Even recently, look, if you're in a pension fund right now, there are many Americans that have just gotten started on their retirement. They're of that age. You've worked all your life at some factory somewhere. Maybe you were a car. Maybe you put together cars. Maybe you were worked at a steel mill. Maybe some other line of work. And you were a skilled trade. I mean, you put 30, 40, maybe even longer years at a factory that manufactured specific goods that benefited this country. Okay, that steel, automobiles. Just all the things that America has manufactured over the years, okay, raw materials and turn them into various metals to be used in those other areas. And you've worked at these factories and you've gone to work day in and day out for 30, 40, maybe even longer years. And they've promised you a pension. You've put all this money away and your employer has put this money away into a pension. And maybe you have a 401k on top of that. You know, before there was no such things as 401ks. Everybody had a pension. Even if you worked at a mom-and-pop grocery store, at one point in time in this country, you had a retirement plan. It was a pension. Most employers offered a pension. But you see, they had to do away with that. So they came around with the 401k plans and investment plans. And, you know, the last big 401k plan that completely failed was Enron, if you can remember that. I mean, there's been others since then. But the really big one that everybody, I think, remembers pretty clearly is Enron. There are people that had millions and millions of dollars they invested in Enron's 401k plans. They had a nest egg. They thought they were just riding pretty. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing collapsed, and they had absolutely nothing. Nothing. See, all that money and those little statements, you know, I bet you those people still have those statements from their plans that they got every month or every quarter. They're worthless. They're just statements that told them that they had maybe – some people had millions of dollars into their retirement. They didn't see dime one. They lost it all. So what makes you think – most of you patriots already know this. I'm kind of talking to the choir, preaching to the choir, as they say here. But what makes you think, for the rest of you, that they're not going to take the pension that you're involved with, that they're not going to take the 401k that you're involved with? Believe me, they are going to take it from you. Do you think they're going to let you collect? Honestly, there's another huge segment of America that's getting ready to retire here. I mean, a large segment of baby boomers are already in the retirement books right now, but there's a whole other segment that's about ready to retire here soon. And all those people, once, do you think they're going to let everybody collect? No, they're not going to let people collect. No way. They never intended on that many people collecting to begin with. Some of you are getting a pension right now. Some of you are maybe getting 401, maybe you know, into your 401ks now, and you're receiving that revenue, and you're getting Social Security, okay? And maybe you're thinking to yourself, hey, I'm doing pretty good, you know. I've worked 30 or 40 years, and you're right. You have done that. I can enjoy the retirement years, you know. But let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, that's all going to go away. You're going to literally wake up one morning and whatever money you thought you had and whatever account you thought it was in will cease to exist. You're not going to have access to it. You're not going to be able to get to it. And if you can get to it, it's going to be completely worthless anyway. The banks aren't going to give it to you. Maybe some will, you know, and that's we're not even talking about the fact that they might switch the currency over, which been here comes the Amero again. I think Monograph, you know who he is, he's touched on that here. Pardon me. You know, they're talking about the Amero all over again. North American currency. You're going to give them $2 and they're going to give you an Amero, and it's supposed to be backed by gold. You know, it's going to encompass the Canadian, Mexico, and American money. It's going to be the whole North American Union money like they have the Euro, you know. Oh, that's not going to happen. They're trying it. That's not going to happen. They're trying to ramrod this healthcare plan through. And we all know what this healthcare plan really is all about, don't we? I mean, those of us have looked into it and have looked into it a little bit anyway. It's complete socialism. Not saying that's what we're not living under right now. But you talk about the real iron fist coming down. Oh, you'll be iron fist in your face. You know, some of the stuff that's in that bill, who knows how many more times they're going to change it to get it through. You'll never be able to read it anyway till after it's passed, if you'll even be able to read it. Congress probably won't be able to read it. They never have. They'll just, okay, that sounds good. They'll sign off on it. Isn't that great? Your so-called elected representatives, your elected representatives, they sign off on stuff that they don't even read. They don't care. It sounds good. We'll vote for it. They're all on a take, man. When are you people going to realize this? You know? Oh, is that a radical thing to say? I don't think that it is. Quite frankly, if you distrust your government, if you don't distrust your government and you consider yourself an American, you're not American any American that I know. So many things we've brought to you over the years, over these last few years. So many situations that are coming around right now. And there's many people out there who just don't believe it. It's not going to happen. It's too big to fail, just like a lot of these banks are too big to fail. Uh-huh. Sure they are. Yeah. Well, we'll talk, you know, if you still think that they're not going to take your pension away from you, they're not going to take your Social Security away from you, if you still think that after the next couple years, then I don't know what to tell you. America's in for a rude awakening here soon, guys. See, really, this should have happened 2 years ago. But they changed the timeline. We've all heard it. Most of us have. The Illuminati, the New World Order, the elites, whatever terminology you want to give them, the minions of the devil in human form, they've changed the timeline. So, you know, got another 2 years, 2 year reprieve. I hope you're doing something. I hope you're buying something. I hope it isn't paper. I hope you're putting food away. I hope you're putting ammunition away. I hope you're putting, you know, tools away. Not going to be a whole lot of those around. You're not going to be able to go down to the hardware store and buy some nuts and bolts or some nails. You're not going to do that. When the total economic chaos ensues, you're not going to be able to find those things. You're not going to be able to find a hardware store that's going to be open. You're going to be too busy making sure that people don't kill you or your family for the clothes you have on your back. That's how bad it's going to get. You see, there's got to be chaos first. For those of you who understand what all this really means, for those of you Bible-believing patriots out there who know what this all comes down to. You know it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to be chaos, a lot of chaos, because that's the only way you're going to get order. Order out of chaos. Come on, guys. You know? They're not going to quit. They're not going to quit. So what, do you think you're having money in the bank here soon? I don't think so. You know? At least 30% inflation rate is what Lindsey Williams was talking about. At least 30, but they're kind of shooting for 50. That means everything you buy right now is going to be 30% more expensive. Think about that. So if you're still working and say you're not, you're not in your retirement, you're not collecting a retirement of some sort, this year when you go in for your review, when you ask your boss for a raise or how that works, you tell him, right off the bat, I'm going to need at least 30% more than what I'm making now. See what they say. They'll laugh at you. Uh-huh. That's what that means. You have to look at it like that, because that's what you're going to need if you want to continue on in the society the way you're thinking now, the way the society runs now. If you want to continue on the way you're just maintaining, when you go get your raise this year, you better at least get 30% above what you're already making if you want to be able just to sustain yourself like you are today, whatever level of subsistence that happens to be. Something to think about, isn't it? And then we got another earthquake, a couple days ago. We're having earthquakes all over the place. Gee, where have I heard that before? Earthquakes, diverse places. That's going to intensify. And like I said before, I've heard maybe it's HARP, maybe it's solar flares, Maybe it is. I mean, I've read everything. I've read what I could on HARP. Yeah. Do I think that they can create an earthquake anywhere they want to create an earthquake? Yeah, they can. They can load a fault line up with enough energy to make it break loose eventually in short order. They can change the weather doing the same type of thing. Most of them, you can't even bring these subjects up with most people. They're not even there yet. It's hard for them to grasp. For most people, it's hard for them to grasp that there is a ruling elite of individuals in this world, very small little families, probably, a handful. They're actually running things. They can't even grasp that thought. And you tell them that they want to reduce the Earth's population, they can't grasp that thought. I don't know. Sometimes we all get that way. Sometimes I personally get frustrated. I do. But that doesn't mean you quit. That doesn't mean you stop talking to people. There's plenty of opportunity to talk to people about things like this. You'll find them normally during the course of a week. But I tell you, a lot of people don't even want to leave their house anymore. And you know what? I don't necessarily blame them. I really don't, especially people to find out what we know. Let me give you the call-in number in case you have forgotten. The call-in number is area code 347-324-3704. Again, that's 347-324-3704. How are you feeling today? How are you feeling this week? It's hard to keep it. It really is. Especially when you start, when you know the things that we know, Mr. and Mrs. Patriot, it's very difficult to keep a smile on your face day to day. It is only because God gives you the grace to be able to do it. Can you do it? there's a lot of people that know what you and I know, and I, you know, how do they keep a smile on their face? Well, we have a caller here, 907 area code. They have their hand up, so I'm going to take this phone call. We'll see where it gets us. All right, let's see how this works here. Try again. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Noel.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. I'm up in Homer.
Yeah, how's the weather treating you?
Well, it finally stopped. I spent all morning. I've been up since 4 in the morning trying to dig out.
Jeez.
I got a pretty big deck, and I cleared off all the snow off of the hot tub and off the deck. I spent about 2 hours on that. Woke up this morning with 4 more feet on it.
Oh, man.
It's really light. It was like 2 degrees out, so the snow is like, you know, powder.
Okay, well, that's not too bad. At least you can shovel it.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it was blowing all night, so I have, like, these 6-foot drifts up against my door. So I'm having to dig out. Good thing the door goes in.
That's right. Oh, man. Yeah, I heard you guys are getting slammed again.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, for some reason, at least yesterday, it hit 62 degrees here yesterday. Just that, it's the weirdest thing, 62 degrees, and today I think it was in the 50s. And, you know, snow's still here, though. I mean, it's not all melted, but, you know, it's creating some, I think, flooding issues in some low-lying areas. Now, it's melting pretty quick, but there's still so much of it that it's still here.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll need it for the fish this summer. That's why I was calling, was I got up this morning after I did all my stuff. I was hit Doc's channel, and he had a site there about Obama outlawing sport fishing. And, man, my partner, we got this place out in Iliamna. Man, he's been calling me all morning, trying to call Fish and Game, figure out what's going on. Man, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
I am.
I heard
pissed.
That, too.
I mean, we got hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in boats and all the gear out there. I mean, he basically is going to have a piece of property on prime real estate that's going to be worthless.
Worthless.
Other than, you know, the building and having... It's all paid off, but, I mean, we're not, I mean, if they outlaw it.
That's it.
I mean, other than me just going out to fish, because I'm out in the middle of nowhere, no one is going to be really out there with a chopper trying to stop us from fishing. You know?
That's right.
I mean, we're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, what I call out in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
But no one's going to be booking the lodge, you know.
That's right. Yep.
And anyone that has a place out here in Homer, they had, like we had talked, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, it changed the law, and they basically threw out everyone's license that wasn't running an operation for charters for the last 2 years. So if you had a charter business for 20 years, it's gone.
Just
and
like that.
Now that's going to be over with. You know, so it's really going to hit me hard.
Yeah, it is. Oh, man.
Of course, I'll always, you know, I'll be able to just throw my line out in the stream and catch a fish. I mean, I'm going to go fishing. I don't care what they say, but.
Yep, same here.
You know.
Yep, same here.
But, man, that was steaming when I saw that this morning. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
And you know, they're getting it all. They're trying to. That's it, man. You know, they're coming after anybody. Any if you think you're going to make a dime somewhere, forget it.
Yep.
If they think they can outlaw a whole section of society that's into doing, I mean, think about it. Why would they even think about that right now? Why would they even what would make them think of doing that? I mean, they don't care. They just thought about it. A group of people sat around and said, you know what? Let's just keep them from fishing. Well, we'll make sure they go broke that. We don't want to make any money. Let's do them in.
Yeah, 60% of the business in Alaska is tourism.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't come up here to look at mountains. They're up here to go fishing.
That's right.
You know?
That's what they do. That and a little bit of gold panning if it hits them, but, you know.
Pretty soon, I didn't see honey, but I'm sure that's next.
Yeah.
It's
anything they can do. You know, anything they can do. They're going to crack it, and it's coming hard and fast. That's just sick. I know, I heard that too. I just got sick. You know. It's just not the country that it once was. Not even close.
Not even close, and it's faster and faster every day.
Yep, every day.
You know, like my dad used to say, everything's gone hell in the handbasket.
You better believe it. You better believe it. You know, it almost, what are you going to find out when you wake up tomorrow? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, let's think, what's going to happen tomorrow? You know, what are they going to outlaw tomorrow? Know.
I definitely keep I try to pull as much cash reserve out of the bank every day.
Yeah.
As soon as checks come in, I cash them and get rid of it, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Buy whatever food or ammo I can, I keep probably $100 in the bank.
There you go.
And that's it.
Do it. Yep.
You know, just so I don't overdraft a check, you know.
Yep. Turn it into, turn that paper fiat into something useful.
Exactly.
No matter what it is. I mean, even just hand tools. Even just buy hand tools or go to yard sales and buy a bunch of hand tools or, you know, believe me, they're going to be needed because nobody's making them over. You're not going to find them once the complete collapse happens, so you're not going to find anything.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gold and silver will only be worth anything for a short time.
That's right. Yep.
And then... I mean, you might as well just toss it in the street because you ain't going to be able to get anything with it because they're just going to outlaw gold and silver.
Yep. That's what they'll do. You know? Oh, every day, something else.
Yep.
Well, you hang in there.
I will. You know?
I mean, you're in a pretty good state, man. I mean, at least, you know, they really have to think about it. They have to pack a lunch if they really want to think about coming after your state or coming after the folks in your state. They may try it, but, you know, just something about cold that really slows somebody down, no matter how old they are or young.
They'll get the, I mean, like the Anchorage Bowl is 300,000, and they'll hit Fairbanks. Those are the two biggest FEMA camps in the state.
Yeah.
I think Fort Rich can hold like a million people, and Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, it holds close to the same amount. Yeah. And they'll hit those guys, but everything else is a village or, you know, small town, you know.
Yeah.
So
they just have resources.
I'll be here in Homer. I'll be up north, so
there you
where
go.
It is cold.
That's right.
Come and get me.
That's right, I dare you.
I double dare you.
That's right. Oh, you got to love it.
All right, man.
All right, you take it easy.
Nice talk to you, kid. No.
Nice talk to you, too.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Isn't that the truth? There are some states... There are some areas of this country that, you know, if you're living in some areas of this country, I think you'll fare better. We all know this. You'll fare better than others. And, you know, I know you hear a lot of people, patriots, you hear a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, okay, well, I live in a city, I'm screwed. No, not necessarily. Don't think just because you live in a city, just don't think that way. Okay, there are probably places in your city, whole abandoned sections of city where nobody goes in, not even the criminal element goes to. And I bet you know where those places are. And if you don't know where those places are, I bet you can find out just take by driving around a little bit, in broad daylight preferably. You know, find some of these places, mark them off in a map, carry a map around with you. You see a place that, you know what, I could hold up here. My family or my little group could hold up in this building here. Nobody's been here forever. Mark it on a map. That's going to come in handy. You know, don't think because you live in a city you're completely isolated or you're going to, they're going to crack down on the cities. You better believe it. When martial law hits, when the troops hit the streets or a combination of goons, as I like to call them, that they use, they're going to lock the cities down. Okay, because they're going to go for the masses first. Standard operating procedure. They're going to go after the most amount of people first. They're going to cut the communications. They're going to cut the food supply, cut the water supply. But, you know, there's some places in the city that don't necessarily rely on city water. They're you know, depending on what city you live in, you've got some natural waterways right in the city, some springs or what have you. You might even know where those places are at. Mark these things off on a map. Make a mental note, if anything. Don't think you can't make it. You can't survive in a city. You know? They might decide they're going to hit the countryside first, roll through all the small towns first. Because maybe they figure that's where their biggest resistors are going to be. They're going to come after us all in one form or another. Just be ready for it, all right? You know, you have a little bit of time. You've never been to a maybe you've bought that rifle. Maybe you've bought that shotgun. Maybe you don't have a lot of range time there. Well, find yourself a range. There's ranges all over this country. I know they've tried to disband most of them. I mean, I remember in my county alone, there was at least 6 to 7 gun shops within a firearm dealerships within when I was growing up. Within a 7-mile radius. Now there's zero, none. And you could say the same about the ranges, too. There was 3 or 4 different rifle ranges. There's only one now. And now it's so strict. And that's the one you saw me shooting at here not too long ago. It used to be free. Now, you see, I've always shot at that particular rifle range. If you watch my YouTube videos and you see me at a rifle range, that rifle range I was at when I was, 12 years old, maybe even younger than that, my father took me there. And didn't cost anything. And when I went for my hunter safety course when I was younger, and I, you know, in this county anyway, you had to show that you knew how to shoot before they issued you anything. You had to prove that you could hit a target. And you had proper marksmanship skills and safety skills when handling a rifle. Well, that's the rifle range I went to qualify on as a young adult. To get my hunter safety card in this state. So I've been going there ever since I was a kid. You know, is that the only one? No. I mean, my parents have enough property that we didn't need to go to a rifle range. But we did anyway. It was a camaraderie. You got to meet other gun owners, other shooters. You learn different things. You get to talk to one another, find out what's going on. But anyway, now, you know, you have to pay a daily fee just to get in there or buy a yearly pass to be able to use it. And now you have I know they mean well, but you have the, what I like to call them, the Gestapo rifle range guys that are looking over your shoulder, making sure that you're, you know, there's so many rules now. You go to a lot of these rifle ranges, no more than, you can't fire any more than one round a second, you know. That's just one off the hand, because that's this last weekend I got nailed for that when I went a little overboard with a little semi-automatic 22 I had. You know, I did some double taps at various ranges, and one shot a second. You know, that's how strict they've gotten, and you've all seen it. I mean, I had one guy down there, he was talking to me, he said he came from a range in Baltimore. Around Baltimore, it's even worse. He can't even go to that one anymore. It's like they're hovering over you. They won't even let you shoot. And they hire people for that, you know. Don't think that they don't. They specifically put people out there to discourage you, to constantly harass you, to where you don't even want to go back. But nonetheless, if you have access to a firing range or you have some property where you can shoot, I encourage you to get some trigger time. Please get some trigger time. That is very, very important. I know ammunition is expensive, guys. I know it is, but that doesn't mean you have to shoot the expensive stuff all the time. know, you can, you know, shoot off a bunch of 22s. You can still find that. Some of you can. Most of us can, bulk 22. I'm not saying it's going to fire every time, but you can buy 550 rounds of 22 long rifle for probably $15, you know. And 550 rounds will keep you busy most of the day. It depends on who you are, I guess. But that'll hone your marksmanship skills. And if you don't have money for that, you know, you have a Red Ryder BB gun or a Crossman, my favorite, the Crossman Pumpmaster BB gun, you know, 177 caliber. Set up a nice little range in your basement or in your backyard. Some, you know, phone books as backstops or what have you. And keep practicing and keep practicing and keep practicing. You know, it's a good stress reliever, I can tell you that. But you'll get some trigger time. You're going to need it. You know, and that doesn't mean that you have to go out and buy, if you're going to shoot larger caliber, if you're going to practice with larger caliber weapons, that you don't have access to ammunition that's surplus, that isn't, you know, top of the line necessarily. And that's why I sort of stick with a lot of, I like European calibers, or more common, 30-06s, that's not European caliber, 30-06, you know, 8mm Mauser, 7mm Mauser, you know, 7.62 by 39 or by 54 rimmed, you know, that sort of ammunition. Like I was shooting, you know, over this past weekend, I was shooting some 7.62 by 54 rimmed cartridges. You know, it's a European Mosin-Nagant cartridge. Now, I got a good deal at a local firearm shop that's out of my state. I actually have to go out of my state now to go to a firearm dealer that I really like. That's how sad it is. But nonetheless, I found a good deal on some Bulgarian surplus ammo. Now, it did smoke a little bit when you shot it. That's okay. I want trigger time. For 10 rounds, it was $2.50. For 10 rounds, a 30 caliber round. So, was it corrosively primed? Yeah, it had some corrosive priming to it, but if you treat your barrel after you shoot that kind of stuff correctly, scrub it out correctly and clean everything correctly, it just shouldn't be an issue. You let the residue sit in your barrel, it's going to become an issue, and not clean your rifle, you're going to have an issue. But you just get some trigger time, guys. You're going to need it, all right? You're going to need it. Okay, I think we're sort of probably will need to take a commercial break here or a revenue-generating break. There's so many different ways to say this. So let's go down here and wait, so many new things on here. Okay, let's take a revenue break here. Be right back.
Hey, Freedomizers. Freedomizer Radio and Dehydrate2Store.com have teamed up to give you an Excalibur Dehydrator giveaway. Go to www.dehydrate2store.com, that is Dehydrate, the number 2, store.com, and fill out the entry. One lucky listener will win an Excalibur food dehydrator on April 1st. The winner will be announced live on April 1st on air during the Proof Negative show, which is 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. That is West Coast time. That is 9 p.m. to midnight on the East Coast. So sign up today by going to www.dehydrate2store.com.
Join me right here at Freedomizer Radio on Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays for Hardtail News with NSM Doc, 4 to 6 Pacific, 7 to 9 Eastern, and on Fridays, 6 to 9 Pacific, that would be 9 to midnight. Hardtail News with NSM Doc, New World Order ahead, hang on, it's going to be a rough ride.
Freedomizer Radio, the brand new home of the Proof Negative Show. Weekdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, until midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, right here on Freedomizer Radio.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. The three W's dot theinternationalforecaster.com.
Introducing the new Obama chocolate bar. You'll enjoy the decadent flavor of this new harp-engineered chocolate with enlightening ingredients such as sedation, hypnotics, estrogen, and clusters of luciferin-coated almonds. Once you've experienced it, you'll never eat other chocolate again. In case studies, side effects have occurred which include obesity, mental disorders, sleep deprivation, unusual happiness and compliancy, and low brain activity. If you experience these side effects, consult the liberals right away. Warning, do not seek advice from truthers. Endorsed by Luciferian Productions, in association with the New World Order, there's nothing like Obama chocolate in selected retail stores near you.
Okay, welcome back, my fellow patriots. Welcome to this live edition of the Bunker Report. We have about 13 minutes remaining, so I'm going to take these 13 minutes and talk to you about I was riding down the road today, and I saw, and you've probably seen it in your neck of the woods. I'm sure you have, and you see it more and more every day if you're driving on the road a lot like I do. More and more for sale signs. I mean, it's just a vain attempt, I guess, people to try to sell their homes before they end up being foreclosed on. And, you know, what's really hard for me, and, you know, I'm not going to come on here and say I'm some tough guy or whatever. I don't sit here and come off that way. I don't think I try to come off that way. Can I hold my own? Yeah. But you know what's really difficult for a so-called tough guy to see? I don't care who you are. If you go by some of these homes, you know they're being foreclosed on. You see a play set out back or a swing set, you know, or slide, so you know they have young kids. You know, you sit there and you wonder, and it pains you because you think, well, what's going to happen to those kids? You know? But through this whole thing, if there's one thing I want to try to stress to everybody, it gets stressful. It really does. As the New World Order starts ratcheting things closer, tighter and tighter around you, you know, you hang on to your family. Okay, I know we all get upset, and we just, I mean, who knows? You go to work, you think you have a job when you get up in the morning one morning, and then tomorrow morning you might not have one. Maybe you go to work and your plant no longer exists or closed down, because you know that's what they do. In most cases, they're not going to give you a week and say, you know, we're going to be closing down in 2 weeks, so or 3 weeks. No. They'll never tell you that. Now, what will happen is, and what has been the norm, is that you show up at your employer and the door is locked. There's a chain across the gates. No warning, just everybody's gone. That's usually what happens, you know. Because they want you to give them 2 weeks' notice before you decide to leave and move on to another place of employment or to better your career or whatever the case may be. But they're not going to give you 2 weeks' notice before they lock the doors on you. So you come home after a day like that, and you know, you're upset. And, you know, I just want everybody just to relax and calm down, okay? because if you, especially if you have kids in your house, you know, your kids can pick up on those things. Your kids can very easily pick up on your emotional state, you know. So for their sake, remain level-headed. Kids are very resilient, you know. They really are. But what pains them more than anything is to see mommy and daddy upset, mad all the time. That's what really hurts. You know, it could be an adventure for them to have to move to a new house or to a new place, you know. That's just, hey, we're going on an adventure. Neat, you know. It doesn't faze them like it fazes you necessarily, but the one thing that will faze them is your emotional attitude towards them. So step back, you know, and take some time with your kids. We talk about a lot of serious things on this station. We all talk about a lot of serious things in our own personal lives, you know. And these are worrisome times that we're going through, guys. They really are. And it's not going to get any better. I got news for you. It's going to get a lot worse than it is now. Remember, the ultimate goal here is order, and before they have order, the satanic order that they want, they got to have chaos. So that's the goal they're trying to head us for, is some sort of chaos, a controlled chaos, but a chaos nonetheless. And we've sat here and we've told you all the different avenues. Every day they come up with a new avenue they're going down, a new street they want to go down, you know, making it illegal so nobody can fish. I mean, just think about the ridiculousness of that, guys. They don't want you to fish. They don't want you to do anything that, A, could provide for your family, whether monetarily or just sustenance-wise, or B, anything that takes control out of their hands. And that's another thing. You know, I have 8 minutes remaining, but I want you to think about something else here. And I think somebody else in the last couple days has said something very similar to this or is on the same page, because I was thinking this. I'm like, I wonder if I'm the only one that's thinking this way. But let me tell you something. Now, we've all heard about the Toyotas, what's going on with Toyota. Okay, let's think about Toyota for a minute. Most of Toyota's vehicles are made, a good portion of them are made in this country. That's a lot of Americans that are still working at Toyota. You know, through all this crazy car mess that's been going on now, you know, GM, government owns them, and the socialist in chief is the CEO. Chrysler's no better. They've been ripped apart. Europeans now have all sorts of patents. Fiat's now got all sorts of patents to old four-wheel drive systems. Mark Kornke, that's what it was. Mark Kornke was touching on this. He mentioned that today or yesterday about how Chrysler has held, you know, all sorts of patents on the four-wheel drives, trains, of Jeeps, and other things that we use to help win a lot of wars that went into a lot of different vehicles, not just Jeeps, real hardcore four-wheel drive systems, not the stuff you find on a lot of cars nowadays. But Chrysler held a lot of those patents. Well, guess what? Now we don't have access to those anymore. They all went overseas. You know, so what's left? We got Toyota left. Now, granted, you know, all the profit, the end result, the end profit for that vehicle goes back to Japan, but you have a lot of people that are working at Toyota, a lot of people that get paid, a lot of people that put cars together to engineer things. Yeah, I mean, we could sit here for hours and go around the supply chain, how it all works, but they spend money in this country. Now, do you honestly think that the New World Order wants that to continue for that particular organization? No, they do not. See, and they come on television and they tell you, it's, you know, the government is for your safety. You've got to if you think for 1 minute that the government is concerned about your safety, then you have not been paying attention. We all like to fall into that little trap that the government, oh, you know, they're all concerned for our safety and they're concerned about our well-being, and you know that's a lie, guys. And you have to step back and catch yourself when you start thinking that way, because we all fall into that trap. Even some hardcore patriots, we still fall into that trap. You know, but if Toyota cars were out there killing thousands and thousands and thousands of people, they wouldn't say anything. They'd let it keep going. Because after all, it's all part of population reduction. But I'll tell you one thing Toyota has been doing. That's been keeping Americans employed, and they've been financially sound. We can't have that. Not when they want to destabilize the entire economy. So why don't you look at this Toyota thing just a little bit differently? I'm not saying Toyota doesn't have problems. But if you remember correctly, back Volkswagen had problems. What was the Ford had problems. Everybody's had problems. Ford used to have a problem with their cruise control. Used to, I was 5 minutes remaining. Boy, this might take a little bit. You know, I remember I was working at a service station, and some lady came in there. This was, I was younger, and some lady came in there with her Ford. I think it was a Crown Victoria at the time, and she had come just off the highway. And she coasted in, but the engine was just revving like nobody's business. And she says, you know, she had it in neutral. And she said, you know, I had it on cruise control, and I hit the brakes, and the engine wouldn't stop. So I put it in neutral, and I just coasted it down this ramp into your service station. And she said, this is one of these Ford cruise controls. And I said, yeah, and I never would have believed it unless I saw it for myself. But Ford had a problem with their cruise controls, but you didn't see the government go after you, didn't bring them to trial about it, and they had a lot of problems for many years about it. You didn't see the government bring them to task on it, now did you? Nope. Mm-mm. Volkswagen, when they were importing their cars for the first time, they had problems. They had all sorts of accelerator problems. Sure did. You know, but did you see the government bring them to task on it? Nope. You didn't. You know, I'm not sitting here trying to defend Toyota. Don't get me wrong. It's not what I'm doing. I'm just saying that, you know, it seems awful strange to me that they're spending a lot of time for our safety really trying to nail Toyota. I'll tell you what they're spending a lot of time doing. They're spending a lot of time trying to dissolve that vestige of America. Those people who work at those plants don't have a job anymore. Because everybody's in a socialist society, everybody's got to be dirt poor and living in socialist housing communities, condo-type units, little apartments. You know, you work for Stalin, and you get yourself your little apartment, you know. You go to work down at the factory or whatever it is. You get paid hardly anything, and you go back to your little two-bedroom apartment. And they expect you to rat your neighbors out. They expect you to sit there and make reports on your neighbors when you hear anything unusual. Maybe they talked bad about the party, you know, and they expect you to go down to your local partisan office or whatever it might be, your little Stasi office, and report your neighbor for talking bad against the Communist Party. And maybe next week, some goons show up and drag him out of his apartment, and now the apartment's vacant, and you now have new neighbors, you see, for your safety. You see where this is going? You see how socialism works? Fascism works very the same way. But we're using the communism as a very recent example. So you see that method of thinking and what's going on with our present economy? I do. Hey, look, I'm sort of out of time. I'm sorry the show didn't kick off today as it normally did. I apologize for that. I appreciate everyone's patience. And, you know, thanks for tuning in and bearing with me during this time. I am suffering a little bit of a ailment. So let me give you the call and number. Doc's show is going to start here in a little bit, and I'll start the music off his music that he likes here. But let me give you the call and number, so jot it down. It'll be the same for his show, too. It's the area code 347-324-3704. Again, that number is 347-324-3704. Hey, remember the first thing that you've got to do is no matter what, I try to say this at every show, get right with Jesus. You know, if I don't care how bad you think you've been, how you don't think you're worthy of God's forgiveness, you're wrong. God loves you. God loves you a lot. He loves you so much that he sent his only son to die for you. So you won't have to suffer the eternal damnation that these Satanists and the devil and his minions are going to go into. okay? He loves you. You know, you don't need a priest. You don't need a preacher. You don't need anybody. You just get down and you ask Jesus to forgive you. You ask God to forgive you in Jesus' name. Forgive you of all the sins you've done, and you'll be clean. And it'll be a good feeling. Allow him into your heart. He'll change your life. I'm telling you. Okay. Thank you for tuning in. Again, this was the Bunker Report live edition. I'll get back to you here soon. All right? See you later.
All right, and welcome to Freedomizer Radio. This is Hardtail News with NSM Doc, and we got a huge show tonight. First, I want to say thank you to everybody that's wishing me and my wife a happy anniversary in the room. Yes, today is our anniversary, but we'll be celebrating tomorrow because, well, I had to work today. So so I want to thank all you guys for joining me, and, well, we've got a huge guest again here tonight, and, of course, he was here with us before. In fact, his show with us here last time was actually our biggest show that we've had yet. So tonight, joining us again will be Chris White from the Zeitgeist Challenge and also the 2012deception.net and Nowhere to Run 1984. I've been trying to get him on air here for a second, but the software is not cooperating with me right now. We'll see if it'll work here. Hello, Chris. If you can hear me, you're live with Doc on Hardtail News. How you doing, man?
Hey, Doc. What's up? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good. I don't know. It wasn't cooperating there for a minute, but it finally stopped spinning and got
well,
you on
maybe
there.
I had the microphone muted. Maybe that's what it was. Well, man, happy anniversary. All right. That's really, really cool. How long have you guys been married?
Yay, 4 years. Four very happy years, man. Happiest years of my life, I got to tell you. I married a good Christian woman, and, well, I guess people have no idea what marriage can be like until you're actually married under God and married to someone who believes in God like you do. So it's just been wonderful. I can't say how great it's been.
Wow, that's great. I'm actually getting married later on August of this year. So I've been with her for, you know, a long time, but finally getting married. And so that's just been a really big thing for me, just like really learning about marriage, you know, Christian marriage and stuff like that. It's just been, like, very exciting. I'm really excited about it.
Well, congratulations to you, too. And I can only tell you this, that she's going to end up being, if God picked her for you, she's perfect for you. And she'll end up being your best friend and just everything you ever thought you would have, it's going to be better. So that's how it is with us. So
definitely.
Tonight we've got a huge topic. Oh, wait a minute. I have someone in queue. I think I know who it is real quick. I think she wants to say hi to you real quick. So let me bring her on real quick we jump into tonight's topic. Okay. If you can hear me, you're live.
Me?
Yeah, that would be you.
I just want to say hi to Chris and say happy anniversary to you.
Well, thank you, honey. Thank you very much. And I know you enjoyed the show last time. She really wanted to say hi to you, Chris.
All right.
Not only that,
hey,
I
got
to refresh because I can't hear the show.
All right.
So,
well,
but I love you.
Yeah, I love you too, honey. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
She told me she was going to call in for my anniversary. So tonight's show is going to be the 2012 Deception, and this also is another of my favorite topics. I know we covered the Zeitgeist, the Zeitgeist thing, I like to call it, last time we were on, and some of that kind of plays into tonight. But for the audience, let's just first off kind of give a description. What is this event in 2012, or what is the significance of 2012?
Well, I guess really to best explain it, I'll just kind of give a thumbnail as best as I can. It's a theory that's been around for quite a while. I mean, more or less for about 10 years. There was sort of a feeling of this that it was supposed to happen like May 5th, 2000. But the main thing is that it's an idea. The one true thing about 2012 is that it does appear that the Mayan calendar will end on that date. There's some ambiguity. Some people think it's like, you know, 1 or 2 days afterwards. But let's just say for the sake of argument that it's, you know, December 21st, 2012. The issue there, that's the last true thing about the 2012 phenomena. The rest is a lot of people putting significance to that event, saying that the Mayans believed that it was going to be a galactic alignment, or they were trying to point to solar flares, and there's all kinds of different things. We could go on and on and on with the different things people believe about that. For instance, you know, Planet X, Nibiru, there is a host of different things that people really believe that there's good scientific, that is, they believe that there's scientific evidence for these things to happen. And there's a lot of people presenting these, you know, you know, presentations with charts and everything that looks, and you know, they're blinding people with what appears to be science. So
kind of similar to Zeitgeist, right? Kind of similar to the same thing they do.
Very
in Zeitgeist.
Similar, because
yeah.
Because it's very, you know, the best way to get somebody to believe something is to make them think that it's the smarter road. You know, if you believe this, you're smarter than all the dum-dums. You know, it's really easy to buy something where you get to be like king of the smart people. So so that's kind of where it basically is. So I am coming from a place where I totally believe the 2012. When I first woke up, if you will, it was about 1999 or so, and I don't know if you could even waken up, because I didn't really, when I look back on it, I didn't, all the stuff that I believed was wrong, but 2012 was one of the first things that I ever found out about. It was actually through David Wilcox's site at the time. It was called Ascension 2000, because it was supposed to happen in 2000 or whatever, but it was basically this general idea that there was going to be a great consciousness shift. And this is really what I believe the main thing about 2012 is talking about, this spiritual evolution, or that we're all going to change significantly in 2012. So that's where I'm coming from, is I used to believe it wholeheartedly. And so anyway, the interesting thing about the Mayan calendar.
About David Wilcox, yeah. Let me tell the audience a little bit about him. I've actually spoken with the guy once or twice too, way back when I first started waking up too. And he thinks he's the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, although I found that out from you. I didn't actually know that until a couple days ago. But I did know that he was a channeler as well, and he claims to have gotten a lot of his information from the same type of channeling that Benjamin Krim and Helena Blavatsky and the rest of those guys believed in. That's correct. That's where he got most of these theories from, was from channeling, correct?
Right. And there's some, he will say on his early part of his website, that was pretty clear. He later would say things like, well, this is not just from channeling, it's also because of hard scientific data and these kinds of ideas. But the thing is, they were from the channeling. I mean, it was clear on his website and things like that. And it's the exact same thing that you see with everybody else that does the channeling. There is a very consistent notion about 2012 from those people that claim to speak with spirits. Now, as the point that I tried to make about that is that the spirits tell the people that they are different things. In the case of David Wilcock, they've told them that they are an ancient Egyptian god, in this case Ra and sometimes Seth. I don't know what his viewpoint about that, but I do know that other people being told about 2012 are being told by beings that they're claiming to be Pleiadians, or sometimes it's Greys. Sometimes it's just, you know, deceased people, or any variation of things. It seems to be really about what the person is willing to believe. That's what these entities will claim to be. So my point is that these entities are liars. I mean, there's not really one, you know, either that or like, you know, ancient Egyptian gods and dead people and, you know, and aliens from, because see, there's, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, that they're claiming to be something that they're not, but they all have the same thing, which is really weird if you think about it. Everybody, and they're very serious about getting people to believe this, so you can find so much stuff about this on the internet, and there's a presentation out there called the 2012 Deception Presentation that I did, which is tries to go through some of the stuff online where, you know, people are talking about what these spirits were making them start websites, making them start blogs to tell people that 2012, it's not about doomsday, it's really about this great enlightenment that's coming. So anyway, that's kind of a very brief thumbnail. I do want to hit really quickly on the issue of the Mayan calendar.
Certainly. Let's start there. Let's start with the Mayan calendar. I was just going to add to the last statement that I think that it's quite funny that the same group that can talk to spirits and things and thinks that everyone should do that can then turn around and laugh at you for believing in Jesus. But we can talk about that quite a bit later, because I have a segment at the end that I kind of want to compare the two.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I'd be interested in that. The Mayan calendar, the main thing I just wanted to say about it is true that the Mayan calendar ends then. The reason that it ends then is important to understand what the reason they were putting the calendar so far in advance is that the way that they were dating things, the Mayans were dating, and it wasn't a particularly good calendar. It left a lot to be desired as far as, you know, it wasn't taking into account for different things like seasons. The priests would have to be the ones that would adjust it for, you know, crops and stuff. It wasn't that good of a calendar. But one of the other kind of things that made it problematic is that every day had its own day on the calendar. I mean, it wasn't like this day will then appear later on, like March 3rd of 2000 and March 3rd of 2002. It would just be March 3rd of 2000, and then, you know, to basically have a history lesson or to point to either something in the far distant past, like they would say, hey, you know, Dad, when was your great-grandfather born? They actually had to create another type of calendar in order to point to the time or date that the great-grandfather was born, or let's say great-great-grandfather. And similarly, if they wanted to point to something like or if they wanted to say, you know, have a history lesson about when was the Mayan civilization, you know, created, it's like, well, that's a good question, young boy, that I was actually created in such and such. And they had an entire calendar to be able to do that. Similarly, to be able to point to events in the future, it was a necessary thing to create a calendar of dates in the future that could be pointed to for different things. And so it was also necessary because of that to have it end at some point, because otherwise you would have to continually create dates forever. The idea that many people have, very few people will point to a reason why the Mayans actually believed something was going to happen at the end of that date. There are only a handful of people that actually even attempt it, one of which is John Major Jenkins, who the methods in which he does it are, I don't even understand how people can give it the time of day. It really does focus. One of the centerpieces of his theory is that they were trying to tell us that this had significance, even though it wasn't written about in any of their documents. It was expressed in things like they had a football game, and this one particular football court, I think Chichen Itza, which I'm actually going to be visiting later on this year, is awesome. It is where I was going. It was so close to Chichen Itza, and I was like, oh, well, anyway. But anyway, so that he said this ball court was aligned in such a way that it was pointing to something that would eventually happen in 2012 and all these sorts of ideas, another of which is and these are like the centerpieces for the theory that the Mayans were actually trying to point to some event, rebirth in this case, and John Major Jenkins' case, is also similarly he takes a picture that is of these two. I can't remember what the significance of the story was, but they were two, you know, young people that were attacking some bird or something like that, and he basically gives it meaning that they didn't have meaning. The Mayans didn't say anything about this, but he was just saying, well, you can see by the, you know, the way that this is put up, and it's clearly talking about the Milky Way galaxy. I mean, it's just like, really? I mean, that's
the hero
everything
twin,
that you have?
The hero twin story. The hero twins.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of the mindset. Now, I wish I had more details in front of me. I actually have a couple things here
about the ball game. He claimed that the sun lines up exactly with the ball court. I believe it's on winter solstice, but it might be summer solstice, and that clearly isn't true. But he sources that in his material, and there's a couple other things too. Oh, it's about an optical illusion, I think, that happens once a year, and that doesn't line up with the ball court either. But he said he claims that it does, and that the ball game represents the new god standing over the dying god of the last year, I believe, is how he put it in there. I had a hard time understanding it too. I actually went to your source material and looked, and it's as confusing to me as it is to you.
Right, and you know, even if it was like totally understood, it would be understood in the sense that this is very, very flimsy. If you think of it in the broad context of what's being attempted here, which is the attempt is to apply massive significance to the idea that the calendar ends on 2012 and say, that the Mayans were saying that this was talking about a major spiritual evolution. And in the absence of any mention of anything about a spiritual evolution or anything even close to it, it's fabricated using these sorts of things about the location of the ball court in relation to a nearby forest. This is like the go-to guy in 2012, like for people that like they want the hard science, they go to John Major Jenkins. It's like, really? And then you look at how much time and effort people spend on the other things about the galactic alignment and things like that, and to, I believe, have total egg on their face in that regard to even claim that the galactic alignments and things like that have any or could even possibly have any physical significance on us on Earth, according to what precession actually is.
I happen to agree with you on that too, and let's talk about precession real quick for a second, because one of the things that most of the folks that believe in the 2012 theories believe that the Mayans were the first ones to discover precession, and that they had the most accurate calendars and they were first, but that's not exactly true, is it?
No, it was discovered about 100 years or so before the Mayans. Precession is just the wobble of the Earth on its axis. It's a motion kind of like a top that you would spin or sort of a gyroscope. It's basically on a 26,000 year wobble. It's a localized, that is, it's just the Earth doing a motion, which causes the stars on the horizon from our perspective to change. So over the course of this 26,000 year cycle from the Earth, our perspective of what stars we can see are changing, but that has to do with the tilt of the Earth in regards to the cycle. So naturally, when people would say that we're aligning to the galactic center because of this 26,000 year cycle, you know that they are a quack, or are they just, they're just listening to somebody else, excuse me, that's told them that. Because if all that's happening is the stars are changing on the horizon, our perspective of the stars are changing because of this wobble of the Earth. From the moon, it wouldn't look any different. I mean, from some Saturn, they'd be like, what are you talking about, alignment? You just tilted your Earth different. I mean, if you look at this on the broad stage, you're exactly the same place you were, you know, you're spinning around. It's totally dependent on the sun's location as far as if you're going to be physically lined up with the galactic center.
I like how you called it the quack test.
Yeah.
That gave me a chuckle when you said that. That's the quack test right there. If they say 26,000 year cycle, you know you're dealing with a quack. I was like, oh, that's pretty good.
especially if they say anything is going to happen. And at this point, everybody varies because it's such a weird sort of phenomena, this idea of 2012, that people will throw anything on that 26,000 year cycle. Oh, we're going to enter into a photon belt. Oh, there's going to be a solar flare. Oh, Nibiru is going to come back. Oh, it doesn't matter. I mean, there you know, a million things out there. But the fact that people say that something, anything physical at all is going to happen in regards to this 26,000 year cycle, it's necessary for you to realize that's impossible.
Are you still there?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just like had a like. I'm hearing some totally advertisement here. I don't know where I'm getting that from.
Oh wow.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Me either. Okay.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. We get. I know we had Ralph Epperson on Monday, and he kept hearing what sounded to him like an operator kept coming on in the background during our call with him too, and I don't agree all the time with Alex Jones, but he did come on today and put a video out talking about how I guess all of the different sites are being hacked, including InfoWars was shut down for 4 hours. And a lot of people here get runtime errors and all kinds of strange things happen whenever we have a guest on that has really good information. So I just worked
through
it. Well,
you know what? Both my websites are down right now. I was hacked last night. 2012 Deception is down. My radio show is down. They hacked from a back door of my site, and you know, out of the whatever how many sites I got out, which is a lot, they just took down those two sites. And so it was a exploitation through something that, I mean, somebody had to know what they were doing just to pinpoint those two sites. But yeah, I don't. If you go to 2012deception.net right now, you won't find anything.
Yeah, I know. I went there earlier. I was gonna drop the link in the chat room for our show. The whole, you know, every now and again, so people could go find you. And that's what it said, that it was unavailable. And I was like, hmm. But the Zeitgeist Challenge is still up, so I'm gonna be dropping that one in here from time to time. And your YouTube page as well, so people know where to go over and check you out at. Aside from catching you at ShatterTheDarkness.net on the radio.
Well, that's Russ's site. He's got all that. I don't know. Shatter the Darkness is totally Russ Dizdar's thing, but I totally am a big supporter of him though.
Oh, I always catch your radio show over there. It's in the side right there. That's how I listen to you.
Oh, so, cool. Okay. He's probably got the widget there in his page. That's probably what,
oh,
that's
okay.
Probably what
okay. Yeah, that's where I've always listened to your show at, is over there. When I go over and listen to his, then I watch yours. So, Let's talk a little bit. I know I interrupted you. Well, actually, that little interruption did, but that's okay. Let's move to the different, because there's several different camps in this 2012, and I'd like to go through each one and break them all down, because that's pretty important here, because a lot of people will say, okay, but what about this piece, or what about that piece? So let's start with the galactic alignment. Astronomical, that particular piece of it, and then we'll move into the other ones from there.
Sure. I think the astronomical is the most important part of the galactic alignment theory, and that is the one that David Wilcock would say is the truth. And it's totally different than the one we just mentioned, the 26,000-year precession cycle, although you oftentimes people refer to the one that I'm about to mention and put the 26,000 number arbitrarily in there, which is, you know, totally wrong, because this cycle takes about, on average, I mean, 250 million years to complete. It's sometimes called the galactic year. It's the sun's traveling around the center of the galaxy. That takes about 250 million years to complete. But as it does that, it kind of has its up and down cycle. As it's going around the center of the galaxy, it kind of goes up and down. And so what this claim is that as it's right in the middle of that up and down cycle, when it's on the plane of the center of the galaxy, that's what they say is, you know, going to cause all the different things or whatever it may be. Now, that one would be interesting, not because there's any evidence to suggest that something happens when that happens, but at least it would be, you know, it would be something. You would say, okay, if that's happening in 2012, maybe there's something to think about there. But that cycle actually takes something like, and I don't have the notes here, but I think it's 33 million years to complete.
Yep. Yes, it is 33 million.
And we actually crossed that plane 3 million years ago. So we're actually not going to cross it again for another 30 million years. So we're further away from that point than when the Mayans made the prediction. Now, what this does is it shows that if whoever's talking to David Wilcock, Ra, you know, whoever he's talking to is lying to him. And this is what this is all about, that's the question that I think everybody should ask, is what the heck is going on with these people? And somebody just put out a great video today that I need to link to. It was 2 days ago. He basically put together different edits from Jordan Maxwell and David Icke, both of which had the exact same experiences of these entities, and they both went to psychics, and the entities told the psychics in both cases that they were going to be used, that they were both going to be used to do this disseminating of the information that these entities wanted them to do, and they were both very dramatic. Both of them were very open that they were malicious entities. That they were very fearful. Jordan Maxwell was very clear that it emanated evil, but yet he totally agreed to do its will, to be its mouthpiece. And, I mean, we're talking about, this is what the truth movement has become, you know, a mouthpiece for something that is lying about very invasive scientific stuff. So back to this whole idea is it's very important. That's a really important one to know, because you can go to David Wilcock and be like, well, you know, what's up with that? And that is something that on the 2012deception.net, there's a post that I recently put out to show the evidence about that. There's four or five different great peer-reviewed articles about that that say that flat out. It's a very detailed scientific read, but it's there.
Awesome, awesome. I have to cut to a break here real quick. We'll be back in about 3 minutes, pick up right where we left off.
Cool.
Freedomizer Radio, the brand new home of the Proof Negative Show. Weekdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, until midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, right here on Freedomizer Radio.
Introducing the new Obama Chocolate Bar. You'll enjoy the decadent flavor of this new harp-engineered chocolate with enlightening ingredients such as sedation, hypnotics, estrogen, and clusters of luciferian-coated almonds. Once you've experienced it, you'll never eat other chocolate again. In case studies, side effects have occurred which include obesity, mental disorders, sleep deprivation, unusual happiness and compliancy, and low brain activity. If you experience these side effects, consult the liberals right away. Warning, do not seek advice from truthers. Endorsed by Luciferian Productions in association with the New World Order. There's nothing like Obama chocolate in selected retail stores near you.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at www.theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. www.theinternationalforecaster.com.
Hey, Freedomizers. Freedomizer Radio and Dehydrate2Store.com have teamed up to give you an Excalibur Dehydrator giveaway. Go to www.dehydrate2store.com, that is dehydrate, the number 2, store.com, and fill out the entry. One lucky listener will win an Excalibur food dehydrator on April 1st. The winner will be announced live on April 1st on air during the Proof Negative Show, which is 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., that is West Coast time, that is 9 p.m. to midnight on the East Coast. So sign up today by going to www.dehydrate2store.com.
All right, and we're back, Freedomizer Radio. This is Hardtail News with NSM Doc and my special guest, Chris White, from the Zeitgeist Challenge and the 2012deception.net. And again, I want to thank you for joining us again, Chris. And we left off talking about astronomical galactic alignment. We finished up with, of course, that's not due to occur for another 30 million years, and so that would make December 21st, 2012. Well, kind of a bit too soon for that. So let's. I got some questions about cataclysms and evidence of previous cataclysms connected with this galactic astronomical alignment. Is there any factual evidence to back that up, or is that just window dressing on an obvious theory that isn't possible?
Sure. Well, there actually that's kind of one of the lines that some of the really hard science was trying to take in trying to figure out what was happening in regards to the astronomical galactic alignment. So if you read some of those scientific papers, you'll find that they were hypothesizing the possibility of more cataclysmic type events at the top end of those cycles of galactic alignment, not the midpoint. But in any case, it was like it wasn't conclusive by any means. It was a hypothesis based on just a guess to sort of give them a framework. So they certainly were saying that there was even less evidence of it anywhere in the middle of the cycle. But as a general rule, I think that you can always put, as long as you're going to pick the cataclysms, it's kind of like the I Ching or the Terence McKenna's novelty theory. He basically created a mechanism of his own invention. Let's just call it a random line graph with different spikes and valleys. He created it and then basically got to apply it to history at his own convenience, therefore being able to choose any event in history that he wanted to and say there's a match. You know, that was a high point, that's a low point, and just basically not choose things, choose other things. As long as you not only control the invention of the system, and then you get to selectively choose the events in history, you can make literally anything seem like a fit. So to say that we can point at certain cataclysms in history really is saying that you get to pick which cataclysms and which other cataclysms. So I'm not aware of anybody that uses that theory, but I'm sure that people do based on a similar sort of concept.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that too. I did a bunch of checking because, you know, I've watched the History Channel every now and again. They have some interesting shows on there. And they just had one on, I think it was day before yesterday. I don't know, I recorded it, so I never watch anything when it's really on. But this particular one, I guess they found one of those Mayan statues on an island 400 miles off of Chile, I believe it was. And they were talking about the only way it could have gotten there, because there wasn't much evidence of them being seafaring people, was either they walked there or they were seafaring and we didn't know about it. I actually uncovered some evidence that they were always seafaring, but I'm not, for the sake of just sticking to the show, they were trying to point to that they walked to this island 400 miles off the shore and pointed to some previous event that happened, and I couldn't see it. I thought it was even the same person you referenced, but this was a much younger fellow than the person you referenced. And I looked around at other places to see if there was, because certainly if the ocean had receded 400 miles and allowed people to walk from Chile to this island, then there had to be evidence of it somewhere else at that
right.
same time period. And of course there wasn't. So the water had to go somewhere. So I have to agree with you that there isn't evidence to back it up. The next big thing, and it's split up into a bunch of parts, a couple of them I want to cover separately, is pole shifts. And Planet X is one of the things I want to do a separate section on. So I think briefly we could cover, I guess, the different ideas behind pole shift and then whether or not it's really happening. And then we'll go into each topics a little bit in depth, all right?
Okay, sure. Well, there is such a thing as both pole shifts, the Earth's magnetic pole shift, which is a cycle that's pretty well known. It's basically the Earth has a magnetic field, and it's more or less in kind of constant transition. And these shifts basically will happen. We'll have the North Pole will be, I mean, not directly, but it'll change positions and be essentially flipped at some point. But that takes, and I'm, again, I wish I had all the information on that, but it takes anywhere from,
It's millions of years. I know that. I actually noted it here somewhere as well, and
right.
I don't see it, but it's like 40 million years or something like that for it to move.
The long and the short of it is that they are very natural. They are going to happen, but there is no way at all in terms of geologic time that they could happen in any way. And I covered this a lot in the Greg Braden debunked video that I did. There's a section on there just about pole shifts where he shows the geologic time. Pole shifts are essentially kind of random. There's no really way to tell when they're going to happen. But they are, once they start, you can basically tell how long it's going to take to do it. And let's see, if we started based on our current position of polarity right now, if we started an absolute free fall, if we started, I mean, if you looked at a line right, and we looked at it on a line, it was the absolute, the biggest free fall that had ever happened, it would still take thousands and hundreds of thousands of years to complete that free fall, because it is such a huge thing to, and I could be just a little off. I go through the exact details in that Greg Braden, what was fresh around my mind, in the Greg Braden debunked video. But that's basically it. Based on our position of height on that scale as of right now, even if we hit free fall, it would still take thousands of years to hit the bottom. So, and there's no evidence that we are, in fact, doing that. Now, Greg Braden's whole theory is that we're always come to this zero point where the magnetic field's at zero, and, you know, in combination with some other stuff that's not true. And then so that's where I ended up getting into a lot of detail there.
I actually remembered the exact quote. My baby's really going off behind me right now. I actually remembered the exact quote. It was a billion years, but to those people, they called it in a blink of an eye. A billion years in geological time is the blink of an eye. I think that's where people sometimes mix up how quickly a pole shift can happen, because they only get fed half the answer, the blink of the eye part, and not the billion-year part.
Right, yeah, they definitely said, and I think it couldn't have been billion. It had to have been million, I think. But I think that they that definitely would call it. Now, that the interesting thing about the other kind of pole shift would be a actual physical crustal pole shift, and this is kind of what partially is talked about in the movie 2012. The catalyst for that in the movie version is solar flares, basically taking whole cloth, sort of a Graham Hancock view of things. But the idea of the of this is where the crust of the Earth actually shifts, and there has been a few degree shift in the past, and that is it's actually a huge amount of time that takes to complete that. It's not a part of any natural cycle or anything, so there's no reason to expect it. There would be no reason for anybody to expect it, because it would be, for all intents and purposes, totally random. It is so, again, we're talking in terms of geological time, it's absolutely unbelievably slow. And in addition, it wouldn't be something that could be caused by, I mean, it would take so much energy to shift the crust of the Earth, and if you're going to say that we're talking about a lot of energy with galactic climate, well, then you have to get right back to the same thing. It's like, which kind of galactic climate are you talking about? The 26,000-year cycle? Because that's not actually going to affect the Earth at all. It's just changing the position of the stars in the horizon. So you must be talking about the other kind of galactic climate that's going to be the cause for this, a lot of this energy, and that's not true, because that happened 3 million years ago, and it's not going to happen for another 30 million years. So either way you look at it, when people say, oh, yes, pole shifts are coming, it doesn't matter if it needs a lot of energy, it doesn't matter, whatever, it's going to be caused by this. And or if it's not that, it's something else. And so that's why it's important to just go down the line and debunk them all, and not like a little bit debunked. I mean, they're not possible. So one by one, you come to the conclusion that this is all just totally untrue.
I have to agree with you on that, too. And, you know, the thing that makes it that made it so hard for me to have to accept that all the different 2012 theories were way out of line, even was the fact that it tidied everything up so nicely. At least parts of this theory really kind of tidies up history real good. It kind of allows folks that are used to a finite universe to grab all the little pieces of history that are a mystery, put them in a nice little box, and say, yep, that's how it is, because it sounds right to me. But when you look into it, the pieces that make it sound right just aren't the real thing. So let's move on to the next section, right? The planetary alignment. I realize there's a lot more to pole shift, but really that's going to play in when we talk about Planet X and Nibiru, and I want to do that in the next segment. So let's talk about the planetary alignment now, because that is another thing that I hear so much about. Planets are going to line up. We're going to have massive gravity, all kinds of effects on the Earth, and cause a pole shift or some other strange thing. And the planets don't even ever align. Isn't that correct? At least not that I can see.
No, they don't. And as far as I could tell, that's kind of part of what the movie was trying to do, too. They didn't outright say that, but at the beginning of the movie, it kind of has this intro to it when the planets are all, like, moving into line, and it's, like, all sort of, it's presupposed that the planets were moving into line, and therefore all this seemingly unrelated solar flares and, you know, all this other stuff was happening, which, if you think about it, is just, like, this perfect storm of weirdness that, like, the planets go in line. What does that have to do with solar flares, and what does solar flares have the ability to, you know, make the crust move? But, and I could tell you why they think that. But anyway, what was the question?
Planetary alignment. I'll ask you about solar flares in a minute, too. That's actually, I'm going to cover that after we do Nibiru.
Okay. Well, the planetary alignment, it's quite simply not true. The planets, if you were looking at it, let's say we're looking at the solar system, there's the sun in front of it. What you would expect to see is kind of the planets all, you know, in line, whether maybe all the planets in line on one side of the sun, or maybe all the planets sort of divided up, some on one side and some on the other, but all kind of in line with the sun. That would kind of make sense if you saw that and you were like, well, maybe that would be a lot of gravity, or, you know, they would kind of, there could be something going on there. But if you're looking at it from that perspective, the planets are not anywhere close to a line. You can verify that with certain types of astronomy programs. I say certain types because only a few different types of astronomy programs will actually show you that perspective. Sometimes they'll basically show you the Earth's perspective, looking from the Earth, what the Earth sees, and that really doesn't do any good as far as what the actual planets are doing in their rotation. So, but yeah, you can see that they're nowhere even close. I've actually heard when people do that program, the other version of the conspiracy theory is that they're kinda, sorta, and not really, like in a pentagram shape. So people say that's what's going to happen in 2012. It's because they're not getting in line, but they're kind of sort of getting in this oblong pentagram, and that's what's going to happen. So, no, there's
that
no
was,
planetary alignment.
Fun. I got a chuckle out of that part.
Yeah. And then, but there is, and this is really subjective, but if you go on a regular astronomy program and you type in, December 21st, 2012, you will get an impression that they are kind of in line from the Earth's perspective. And this is what happens every single year. It's not a big thing, and they're not really in line. I mean, there's like, you know, they're certainly not in perfect alignment. And even if they were, it would only be, you know, an astrological event. That is to say that from sitting on top of the Earth, looking out at the sky, even though the planets are very much not in a line, because of our perspective sort of being sort of two-dimensional at that point, they kind of are in line. And, of course, that wouldn't cause any physical anything. And not
right,
just
that's
that.
But the claim is about gravity. The claim is them lining up with the sun, and then the sun being aligned with this supermassive black hole or whatever is in the middle of the universe is going to unleash horrible gravity on the Earth. But if the planets aren't lined up and the sun isn't lined up as well, then the whole argument goes out the window. Even if they look like they're aligned, that doesn't create the gravity. I know that's just crazy to me.
Exactly. Well, and they're not really even that aligned. Even from that perspective, I'm kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt that, yeah, okay, sort of. And I think it's not even all of them that are in that sort of line, but nevertheless, it's not true.
Well, let's say for instance we have let's say the space shuttle is headed out towards the moon during this time it's supposed to be aligned. From their perspective, depending on where they are, it's even going to be in fact from any other planet or anywhere else, it's a completely different picture as well too, right?
Sure, it would be no different than every single year since we've been able to get space shuttles up there. Nothing would be different. The precession cycle wouldn't be any different. We certainly wouldn't be any noticeable difference as far as the, you know, galactic up and down and the cycle across that year. There would literally be nothing that would change. And their perspective would certainly see, A, there's no planets in alignment. They would see that there is, if you could even kind of see this, you would see that we're nowhere near in any kind of alignment, in any way, shape, or form. It's totally unreasonable from a actual looking at the solar system perspective.
Yeah, that's what my research has shown too. Now we have 10 minutes left of this segment right here, but we want to dive into this Planet X and Nibiru thing now because it's going to take a minute to get through. I already know. So the biggest part of this theory, at least from what I hear lately, is Planet X. Planet X is hidden. Planet X is coming. So first of all, where did the whole theory of a Planet X and this whole kind of myth surrounding it come from?
More or less from Zachariah Sitchin, but kind of, you know, from Velikovsky a little bit, but he definitely created sort of this whole thing and turned it into Planet X and gave it, you know, life because Sitchin claims to be this. I mean, I read in the back of any one of Zachariah Sitchin's books, and he's saying that he is this unparalleled, you know, a person who knows Sumerian so well that no one else can translate text like him. Even people that have studied it their entire lives have no idea what it says, only Zachariah Sitchin, and that's why Zachariah Sitchin can make these claims. But the problem with that is that you don't even have to be a scholar of Sumerian to see that Zachariah Sitchin is dead wrong. And one of the people that that show that so clearly is Dr. Michael Heiser, and his website is SitchinIsWrong.com. And one of the things that you'll see on that website is called Explanation of Cylinder Seal 243, I think. And that's the one that Zachariah Sitchin claims to the centerpiece of his theory that the Sumerians believe there were 12 planets, including the sun and the moon, which they apparently thought to be planets, according to him, and that they and that this proved that there was another planet. And it is just unbelievably. I mean, I show it in just about all the different 2012 videos that I do, and it's to a degree that you can see plainly just by looking at the pictures that this is a total lie. There's no way out for Zachariah Sitchin. I just don't understand how people could. The thing about it is, for when I first started this, all I wanted to do was show people the website SitchinIsWrong.com. I thought that was going to end all of this. I was like, hey, no, let's look at this website. He's totally wrong. And then to my shock, nobody. And so I still think there's no recourse. For Zachariah Sitchin, he is busted, and I think that there's a lot of reasons that I believe that Zachariah Sitchin is a knowing disinformation agent. And I don't say that about very many people at all, but I do think Zachariah Sitchin is a knowing player in this.
I'd have to agree with you on that too, because I started out I read Zachariah Sitchin, and my mother studied Greek and Aramaic, and she was really big into taking the scriptures back to their original languages, so that she made sure that she knew what she was talking about, because she did a lot of witnessing to Jehovah's Witnesses on the Bible, and so she had to take things back to the Greek so that she could show them where certain verses were changed. And I happened to read that book and write my mom a letter saying, hey, what do you know about this Zechariah Sitchin guy? And it really was before it was when his book first came out, so it was before the whole 2012 craze. And she sent me Michael Heiser's paper that he had written. I read the book about a year after it came out, and then Heiser he refuted the work and challenged Zachariah Sitchin on numerous talk shows to come on the air. He offered him money to come on and debate him. And I actually it was a fairly thick scholarly paper that, you know, if anybody's ever looked at scholarly works, they're dry, they're usually long and hard to read. And I was so interested in the subject that I read the whole thing, and I thought surely this is the end of Zachariah Sitchin, but he's written I think 5 more books since then. So in fact, it was an eight book series, I think. So I have to agree with you that once people read Michael Heiser, that should be the end of Sitchin and the whole theory, but it seems to be growing day by day. And you already mentioned the parts where he claims that Uranus and Neptune and Pluto are pictured, and how could they know, of course, unless they had a telescope. But if you replace a couple of those with with the moon and the sun, then of course you have all of the you have the right amount of planets there in the picture. So yeah,
sure. And there's no the Sumerians were very clear about the pictures that they used for the sun, the moon, and the stars, and that it's like kind of entry level Sumerian, for what I would gather, to be able to recognize the symbol for the sun, recognize the symbol for stars, and recognize the symbol for the moon. It was very very understood. And
yeah,
and Zacharias either just totally forgets that and just sees what he wants to see and disregards what that seal is all about in the first place.
Yeah, that was a great point. I forgot that part, because the sun always in Sumerian is represented by a circle with a bunch of squiggly lines coming out of it, and the star is always represented by a circle with a, I guess you'd call it, a couple of really long pyramids or chevrons crossing each other behind it, I guess is how you'd say it, because they don't actually cut through the circle. He somehow points out that an obvious star symbol as the sun over and over and over. So yeah, that's an excellent point right there. And someone wanted me to spell Michael Heiser. So it's MichaelHeiser. And that's SitchinIsWrong.com if you want to go over there and check it out. So let's talk about now we've talked about the theory. So let's talk a little bit about some of the reasons why we can't see Nibiru right now, because there's a couple of different reasons why we can't see it, and you know, why we haven't, with modern technology, been able to notice its effects.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to think about this. There's lots of different reasons why the reasons that are given. Some people say that it's behind the sun, and I've seen different people. Penn and Teller just had somebody on there that was talking about a picture behind the sun. It was, anyway, it's pretty funny. They're really, really raunchy, but it was funny. The thing about that is, if it's behind the sun and it's in any kind of way, like people are saying, this crazy elliptical 3,600 year orbit, then it would necessarily be the shortest amount of time in that orbit would be behind the sun, because it's getting spun around the sun and catapulted back out to this 3,600-year orbit. So it's necessary that if it is behind the sun, it would be behind the sun for an extremely short time. And we would, in any other way, I mean, if this thing was barreling towards us, then we would know, because it would, even if it was as far as away, you know, giving the best possible estimates, if it was going to get anywhere near us anytime near 2012, it would be the largest object in the sky. There is a lot that I went into, and there Greg Braden debunked about this, that is really important, because what I think that people see when they're talking about some of the old school problems that are associated with this, because people point to a lot of stuff and say this is why Planet X exists and things. I think that those problems about certain dates being changed, you know, things that happened in the past, different orbits, resonant orbits changing in the solar system, these kinds of things are explained by these ancient sort of near passes of Mars, and that there was a time in history when Mars and the Earth were on resonant orbits, and this caused at certain points severe cataclysms. You can actually you look into history, the reason people were so afraid of Mars in antiquity was because of these near passes of Mars. And they would cause great cataclysms, and it was very timeable. You would know when this would happen. Mars would be extremely close. There's a really good anecdote about this. There was a book called Gulliver's Travels, where the individual who wrote the book, he was just writing a story, but in it he had this character go to this far-off land where these scientists were boasting about that they knew that that Mars had two moons, and that they said, you know, very specific things. One is that its orbit was going the other way, and another that there was it had some other feature that I can't remember what it was. But it turns out that that's exactly true, and the reason that's significant is that they are the smallest objects, the smallest moons in the solar system, the darkest objects in the entire solar system. They're made out of a particular material that make it completely, without modern equipment, unable to be seen. So, and they are also named for like fear. That's like Phobos and, you know, something like that. This is, again, with this ancient sort of view of, and actually, if you really want to see, I detailed all the places I was getting all this information from in that Greg Braden debunked video. And so I really encourage people to check it out because it also explains why the 360-day cycle of the year and the 365-day cycle, why we needed to add 5 days to the calendar, and that why all of ancient history added them at about the same time. It was because it was absolutely necessary because we got on different resonant orbits because of such a near pass happened that it kind of shot us back off of this into the orbit that we're currently holding with Mars.
That's interesting. I came across a similar story by a guy who wrote a book, Beyond Science Fiction, named Jim Wilhelmsen, who talks about the, I guess it was Saturn giving birth to Venus, and it actually had a close pass with Mars that caused it to have the close passes with Earth until its orbit settled down. It was kind of like a war between planets. And he does some really excellent work too. So I was kind of surprised. I was actually surprised that you would. I didn't see the Greg Braden debunked video, or I wouldn't have been surprised. But I was surprised that you had mentioned that there, because there is a lot of evidence to point to Saturn being the planet that the ancients were so fearful of. So that's pretty cool for you to put that in there without. I like it when coincidences happen like that. It's pretty cool. So
well, check it out.
See,
there's that actually in that. In that resonant part, there also Venus is a structured part of that. It's all explained in those notes in that particular video, but go ahead.
Okay, awesome. I was just going to say we have to go to break, and then when we come back, we'll switch gears a bit to solar flares and, the last one, the Enlightenment theory. So we'll be right back here in just a couple of minutes.
Sounds good.
Hey, Freedomizers, Freedomizer Radio and Dehydrate2Store.com have teamed up to give you an Excalibur Dehydrator giveaway. Go to www.dehydrate2store.com, that is Dehydrate, the number 2, store.com, and fill out the entry. One lucky listener will win an Excalibur food dehydrator on April 1st. The winner will be announced live on April 1st on air during the Proof Negative show, which is 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., that is West Coast time, that is 9 p.m. to midnight on the East Coast. So sign up today by going to www.dehydrate2store.com.
Hey, Val Velado here. Don't miss my show Sunday night from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific. We are taking the New World Order by its nasty horns and exposing them in the light. We are spreading truth. And you know what? You need to become part of this effort. One person at a time, we can make change. So don't miss my show, Val Velado, Sunday night, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on Freedomizer Radio.
This is INF 11B38. In today's world, we have lost what truly matters in life. We're told what to think, what to wear, how to act, where to be at a specific time, what to do when we get there, and when we can get off of work so that we can funnel back into what is now deemed second priority by the elite corporations that bind us in tyranny. We are controlled by every facet of life. It is important that we break from this false reality that it's the elitist type of world we're fooled into believing. The only way to do this is simply by knowledge. So join me, INF 11B38, Saturdays 6 to 7 Pacific Standard Time on Freedomizer Radio.
Freedomizer. Wow!
All right. Welcome back to Freedomizer Radio. This is Hardtail News with Doc. And, of course, our special guest tonight is Chris White from the Zeitgeist Challenge and Nowhere to Run 1984 on YouTube and also the 2012deception.net, which we just heard has been hacked recently. Go figure. Happens here all the time. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, it is a fantastic information-packed interview with you, Chris. And we left off talking about, well, we were talking about Nibiru, and we've covered the different, really the different theories on that. So let's move into the solar flares now. Solar flares are, well, it was the topic of the 2012 movie, and it's really been in the news lately. Even the History Channel has kind of been, prepping people for something to be happening behind some solar flares or some kind of solar activity. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. Well, the thing about the solar flares is that that we've been monitoring solar flares for a long, long time. It's like one of the most because solar flares are so closely associated with sunspots. And sort of a loose rule of thumb is the number of sunspots and equal sort of the general number of solar flares and how many and how strong solar flares are. Of course, we've gotten a little bit better at it now, but that's been going on for hundreds of years. So there's actually a huge body of evidence to sort of map out what solar flares do. And unlike a lot of the other things in that we're talking about in 2012 issues, solar flares are pretty darn predictable in that they have a cycle where 11-year cycle where they pretty much, you know, go from minimal, what they call solar minimum, to solar maximum. And it's true that solar flares can be random at any time. In fact, the largest solar flare that's ever been recorded was at a solar minimum. But as a general rule, they follow a solar sort of 11-year solar cycle where the more and more solar flares are at the maximum, and the less solar flares and less strong ones are at the minimum. Now, the claim is that this we're going to have, you know, 2012 is we're predicting this grand, you know, solar flare thing, but that doesn't even make any sense. I mean, if you say that right, you could be referring to the solar maximum, but we now know the solar maximum is going to be in 2013, not 2012. But even if you were totally it would be like how somebody said it. Like if I said it, you know, 11 years ago, and I said, you know, didn't you know that at this time there's going to be the largest solar flare? We're going to be at a solar maximum. It's going to be huge. And you're like, oh, my gosh, is that real? It's like, yeah, it's happened every 11 years for the past, you know, forever. But so nothing significant is going to happen other than how people say it. Now, there have been little blurbs here and there. Like, for instance, I just have something in my email box right now that says something to the effect of, well, you know, NASA mentioned that we're going to have this great, huge, unprecedented solar flare in 2012. And what's interesting about that is NASA most certainly did not say that. It would be ridiculous to claim that you know when a random solar flare is going to happen. You could predict that there's going to be more solar. You couldn't say that this coming up solar maximum is going to be much bigger than any other solar maximum in the history of the world. There wouldn't be any, you know, there wouldn't be a good reason to state that, as far as I know. But
I would have to agree.
And there might be something, but I don't think that there is. I mean, I'm not like super knowing all that stuff about that. But I will say this, that they that the NASA article was saying that it was this hypothetical situation. It was a fictional account of what would happen in the event of a major solar flare. And this fictional account just happened to use the date of, I think it was 2012, maybe even December 2012. I can't remember exactly what it was. But it was clearly, in this fictional account, they used the term 2012. And so that thing hit the internet like, I mean, it was everywhere. That article from NASA was everybody's proof that NASA was saying that 2012 there was going to be this huge solar flare, and it's just totally not true. So yeah, that's just bad. That's just bad science. Now, I would say this: let's say that the biggest solar flare that we'd ever known of you know, let's say just as big as the last one or whatever. Now, it's hard to say because I think the last solar flare that was noticed, you know, there wasn't as much electronic stuff going on or whatever. But basically, that's what would happen. The electronic gizmos would, you know, blink out, maybe even for a long period of time. But that's it. I mean, that it, other than the infrastructure damage that that would cause, you know, having security systems down or whatever, phones and iPhones wouldn't work or whatever, but that's it. So, I mean, to say that the solar flares, like the movie was suggesting, that we're just on this solar cycle that's going to melt the core of the Earth, which is Graham Hancock's whole idea, is insane. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but you would have to, like, have the sun sitting right next to the Earth. I mean, the amount of energy is, as far as I understand it, so unbelievably much more than any solar flare could ever give. Regardless if we had no magnetic field at all, I mean, we're talking about it's not going to melt the crust of the Earth or whatever.
I would have to agree, because the worst on record sunspots, at least as long as, and flares that they were keeping record of, happened in the 80s. And they're talking about that this one might be as big as that one. And I was here in the 80s. I was in the Army, as a matter of fact, and I'm still here now. And all of our electronics kept working fine while I was over there guarding the border against communism over there in Germany, when we had an East Germany to worry about coming through the Fulda Gap. We went right through that like it was no big deal. So I know we are more dependent on electronics, and I could see the havoc that all the electronics going out and maybe the power grid going down, that would create anarchy. But it certainly, anarchy won't melt the crust of the Earth either, so I would have to agree with you. It might melt some other things, but not the crust of the Earth. So here to me, this next piece we're going to get to right now is the biggest piece of this to me. It talks to motive, speaks to motive, and it combines a couple things. It's the Enlightenment theory as well as the passing through the photon belt theory kind of combined, because I think they're related. So let's talk a bit about the Enlightenment theory and why, at least I believe, that's the most dangerous of the theories out there.
Well, it is, but it's not first very obvious that it's really dangerous. But the Enlightenment theory is different. It's certainly a growing number of people, and always from the beginning there was this idea that 2012 was not some doomsday event. Oh, the people that think that, they're crazy. What it really is this spiritual evolution. Those that are of a certain type of mental vibration, they're going to change. There's lots of sort of ways that they can get people into this mindset. Sometimes they'll say things like, you know, really, we're all just a bunch of, you know, atoms that are kind of, you know, if you think about, they got all kinds of different sort of illusions to sort of say that, you know, it's possible for us to evolve in that sort of way, in that. And then they say basically that's what's coming in 2012. There's going to be a great shift in consciousness where, you know, people are going to be in this new sort of enlightened state, this new sort of evolved state. But there's always going to be this remnant of people that aren't ready for that enlightenment. And so there's various different things that they say about that. But the reasons why people say this are very varied. One of them you mentioned was the photon belt. And that requires a great deal of explanation, I suppose. But there is not a whole lot of people that do claim a reason why this is going to happen, which to me, and you wouldn't believe it. I mean, I actually have a Spanish version of the 2012 videos out there, and I've been learning Spanish. I'm pretty good. I think I got it pretty well figured out, except I still have some trouble with some irregular verbs and stuff. But I'm reading some of these comments, and they're the exact same thing. It's basically, oh, I know that there's no actual, you know, doomsday event. What's really going to happen is that we're all going to be enlightened, you know, or some version of that. And that's just what everybody thinks. And my point in this whole thing is that that's what we're all supposed to think. We're all supposed to get some sort of vague notion of that in our minds. And that's why all the people that were almost everyone that started the 2012 stuff right from the beginning have been talking to these entities. And almost without exception, those entities don't take a apocalyptic view ultimately of it. Some of them do for other reasons, I think, but they take the you're going to be enlightened version of events. And that, in contrast with the fact that those entities are wrong and that they're apparently lying about who they are, demonstrated what they tell other people that they are, then we're left with motive. We're left with something about, well, we're not necessarily at the point of motive at that point, but we're at the point of intent, that they are giving us a false version of the story for apparently some reason. And so as I was learning a lot about this stuff to that 2012, that it was wrong, I mean, and seeing the great push for it, I mean, this is a big thing. People really are being encouraged to believe in 2012 on a very massive level. As I said, it was one of the first things that I was given in the truth movement. I was a 2012-er right before I was a truther. And that's not an accident. It's in my opinion, anyway.
I would have to agree with you too, because as I said, one of the first books that ever crossed my path was 12th Planet by Zechariah Sitchin, and so all of my initial forays onto information searching and things like that all had to do with trying to figure out this theory, because it tidied everything up so nicely for folks. But the fact of the matter is that Benjamin Krim talk, even though he doesn't say 2012, he talks about a grand event coming and a spiritual evolution and enlightenment coming and communing with spirits. And I call them demons. I keep it, you know, what the Bible says. The Bible is specific about soothsayers and fortune tellers and channelers, and they were evil, and what they were dealing with was evil. And so whenever I hear from somebody, I channeled a spirit and they said that we're going to be enlightened, that throws up huge red flags to me, because number one, they don't even know what they're communicating with. Some of them think it's aliens. Some of them think it's deceased relatives. Some of them think it's us from a long time ago. So they don't even know, and that should scare folks to death right there.
Sure.
And
you've got people like the Theosophical Society that's, I mean, they wouldn't say the exact same things about 2012. And that's what one thing I want to really try to focus is that it would seem to some people that this is – that not everybody believes in 2012, of course not. But that's true. But this idea is just another packaging for the same idea. And again, that's part of something that is called the externalization of the hierarchy, or at least that's one name for it. Basically, it's preparing the world for a coming Antichrist. And the idea of a spiritual enlightenment, which leaves behind a group of people that aren't enlightened, and I know that seems hard to believe that the politically correct world could fall into something like that right now, but I believe that there's going to be some events in the future that are going to shake up the world to such a degree that something like that is going to be the only explanation other than, you know, something like the Bible being true. But anyway, so there are other ways that this idea is being taught to people, including theosophy, including, you know, a lot of the Eastern religions have a version of this sort of idea that can be easily reconciled to it. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, we're going to talk specifically about that in the last half hour, about who benefits from the 2012 deception, because I'm in agreement with you there. To finish up with this, especially the photon belt part, because that part is really hilarious to me, because technically they're talking about somehow we're going to drift through the Pleiadesian star system or something like that. And that's not even photons, right? That's a gas cloud, isn't that correct? And they should know that, right?
Right. I mean, that's what's so funny is that you have like people. My favorite is when the Michael Tesarian is wrong video that I did. Michael Tesarian, if you know who he is, he's just so superiorly intellectual, you know, and that's kind of his whole bag, is that he's just way smarter than everybody else. And here he's talking about this photon belt, which, I mean, a nebula that he's talking about is made up of, like, gas and plasma. It's not photons. I mean, photons are light particles that don't gather together. They're light. They travel very fast. And I mean, some people will bring up the part of that theory. It's like, well, they will gather together on the cusp of a black hole. But I would say if we're moving into a black hole, the last of our worries is going to be a nebula. We're going to have a lot more to worry about. But we're not. But just to cover that, we're not anywhere near black hole. We're not moving towards it. In fact, we're moving away from the Pleiades. This idea was, again, something that came directly from people that were channeling two different kinds of entities. Well, that one of them said that they were Pleiadians, and then another one said they were Sirians, I think, from the Sirius star system. But either way, they both, at the same time, this actually came through like Nexus Magazine, which is a very nefarious magazine that kind of was for a long time sort of conspiracy place where a lot of people were getting this. It's a very New Age sort of situation, but it's a long story. But there was an article written in there. There's a long story, but this is basically now proven to be absolutely ridiculously wrong. We're moving away from it. Even if any of this was true, the calculations about the speed that we would have to be moving at are just unbelievable. I mean, it's beyond impossible. I don't have the figures in front of me. I do hit this.
10% of the speed of light. 10% of the speed of light is how fast we'd have to be going. And
exactly.
Yeah.
It's just not, and I'd actually go to a great deal of detail in this in the Greg Braden Debunked 5 of 15, because, and I didn't really have that much against Greg Braden Debunked or Greg Braden, but he just held all of these crazy beliefs about everything simultaneously. So it was kind of like being able to debunk the entire New Age with just one guy who, you know, and his whole gig is that he's trying to show that it's all scientific, and so he's quoting all these things to prove people, quote unquote, that it's scientific. So it was just really easy to be able to hit a lot of birds with one stone. But yeah, so photon belt is, and here's the other thing about that. Let's just say for the sake of argument that there was something in the Pleiades system that we pass through every 26,000 years, which is what they say. Well, there's lots of different things about that. First of all, we wouldn't pass through anything as a result of the 26,000-year cycle because it's, as we discussed very early, it's not even a physical thing. It's something that's a perception thing based on the wobble of the Earth. So we're not moving anywhere. The Earth is not going anywhere over the course of 26,000 years. So that's impossible. Let's just say they were talking about the 250-million-year cycle. But the problem with that is if it was supposed to happen every time we came back around to the system, then it takes 250 million years to come back around to it, and the life of a nebula is in the hundreds of thousands of years. So there's no way there would be no reason at all to expect a nebula to still be there, not just in terms of its lifespan, let alone its, you know, motion. But then again, you have the biggest problem, in my opinion, is that the complete lack of evidence that even if this was some just grand thing made up of light, let's just say it was all light. We're going to pass through a big, 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 wonderful light. The whole universe was, the whole solar system. So what? I mean, is there any evidence at all that light's going to make us spiritually enlightened in that sense? I mean, there would have to be a just huge body of evidence saying that this particular light is very DNA-changing light, because that's what they say, that it's going to actually move, change your DNA and all this stuff. There would have to be like at least something for me to think that that was going to happen. But again, it goes to show you the power of the presentation. And I think it was Chuck Missler who once said, beware the man with the colored slides. And it's just kind of an idea of an old-timey kind of thing that the presentation is paramount in this regard. You have to be on your guard when you're listening to people, you know, flash data in front of you like I'm doing right now, I just realized. But, you know, that I do try to link everything. If you go to my videos and stuff like that, I try to provide links to where you can, you know, go find out for yourself.
Yeah, you most definitely do that. The questions that I had that I wasn't sure on, I followed right through the links to check out. So you definitely well researched, and you've done some traveling to do that research too. Spent your own money, and that's what really impressed me the most is that the amount of time you've put in and the amount of your own time and money you've taken to go out and do this. But then, because this next segment is so important, I know that's why you've done it, because there's really something hidden in all this that people need to understand. And folks like David Icke and Jordan Maxwell aren't going to tell you the part that's hidden in this, that because they want you to lead you there by just planting, I guess, the seeds, so that when you see whatever events that are planned to come about, that you'll be primed to accept what's going on. That's what I see going on here. I see this as a thinly veiled assault on Christianity, and the actual the tenets of Christianity, and a reintroduction to the original sin of ye can be as gods, one way or another. And this is a real neat way of hiding that theology behind all this other stuff. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, I mean there is so much that's going to be done incorporating this idea. It's not all going to be about 2012, but it will. But the idea behind 2012 is a very subtle way to begin to implant, and eventually, once the trigger is pulled, to activate a lot of the programming that we're getting about this. And one of them is that we can be as gods. In my opinion, and this is my opinion, that in the future, well, let me back up and say this. There's something that I do know about the future, and that is that through the Bible, the Antichrist is going to come and eventually cause people to worship him. That's ultimately what Satan's going to want to do with this world. He's been given control of this world, and that's ultimately what he's been spending all his time from the very moment he found out he was here to be able to do, to force everyone to worship him. Now, Satan is not omnipresent. Satan is not omnipotent. Satan uses the things of this world to achieve the same kind of goals. In this case, in God's case, God has the Holy Spirit, for instance. Satan doesn't have that. He has demons to sort of do sort of like that, sort of kind of a counterfeit of that. To cause people to worship him is going to require a physical infrastructure on Satan's part. That's one interesting part of the last book, part of Revelation, and that is that the false prophet, one of the false prophet's job is kind of acting as what the Holy Spirit does. He continues to cause people to worship the beast. His job is not to glorify himself, the false prophet. His job is to get people to worship the beast. And they use, apparently, some sort of mechanism to do this. The mark of the beast, its main function is part of, it has more to do with worship than it has to do with buying and selling. That's a part of it. That's sort of an incentive program. But ultimately, the mark has to do with forcing people to worship people. It's my view that some sort of technology will be used in this situation that will actually cause people to want, not, I don't know about want to worship him, that will somehow force them to do it. Some sort of technology, in my opinion, is being built to be able to do that. I think it's going to be far more than a tracking device. I think one of the reasons I think that is that the wording of it doesn't sound like, you know, people seem to think, you know, God says, hey, you know, you get the mark of the beast, you know, that's it for you. I'm washing my hands of you. I don't think it's quite like that. I think that what's being said there is you get the mark of the beast, you're not going to want me anymore. You know, it's that he's done everything he can to say, don't get it. If you do that, that's it. You're going to worship him. And so that's what I think this is all about. This is what his plan is. And once we understand that, everything makes sense. If you understand that he's been working on this plan for a long, long, long time, and for whatever reason, he wants humanity to worship him. He must get something out of it. I don't know. There's something going on there I'll never be able to know, and I don't care to. But that's what the deal is. So
Hold on one quick second there. I want to let you know that this, I want to devote this last segment to, because I watched, especially, I was really impressed with the last two parts of the video about how you elaborated on how you thought things were going to go when the Antichrist did appear, the events that would happen. So I want to take this last 30 minutes to really go into that in some detail, all those little pieces, because I think sure. It's excellent.
Okay. Well, let's see, where to begin on that?
Well, we can start with, let me say that, have you ever seen the vision that George Washington had during the war with King George for our independence, where he had, it was three visions that he had in that dream, and the third vision was that there would be, well, there was of course the first battle, for independence, and then he saw, of course, that America was going to become independent. And then the third vision was he saw in the future there would be a great, great battle, a big black cloud over America, and that all the forces from around the world would be here fighting against the American people. And at the moment, it seemed like when America was about to fall to this great evil, and this is in Wilhelmsen's book as well, that there would be a great light, and what looked like an angel would come down from heaven and actually help smite the enemies that were attacking America. And at the last minute, America would be saved. And then this person would set themselves up as Jesus. And then later, of course, the vision ends there with George Washington saying that America will never, that its flag will never fall from the flag post, and it would never lose its independence. But Wilhelmsen goes on to talk about how this could very probably be the entrance of the Antichrist, posing as a fake second coming of Jesus to come back and possibly even fool the elect. And that fit really closely with what you were talking about. So I thought you could kind of pick up from there, because that's where really your version, I think, is probably closer to the facts than the rest of what Wilhelmsen wrote.
Sure. And I think that that's right on. I mean the details of how that all plays out, the war and all that stuff is probably up for grabs. But let's just look at it. So my theory is that when this happens, that all of us out there that are in the truth movement and the entire world that we've all been prepped for this, that we're going to really think it's a good idea. And I think that other than being in Christ, everyone's going to think this is a good idea, and they're going to believe this lie. One of the most interesting admonitions in the Bible is, to me, is it's in different sorts of passages, but Mark 10 is one of them. It's a parallel passage to Matthew 24. But they asked, you know, Jesus took some of his best friends together, and they were there like, hey, Jesus, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen when you return? And Jesus was really clear. Two times he said this basic thing. He said, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And we shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Be ye not troubled, for such things must needs be. But the end shall not be yet. Well, if you really chew on that for a while, it will confuse you, because he's saying that in the context of this person coming in his name, saying that he's Christ, there's going to be this war. But he really wants us to make sure that the end is not yet, that is not going to be the end. So it's my personal belief that there is going to be something set up, a false sort of Armageddon, and I can guarantee you that this Armageddon is going to be made to look exactly like it's caused by Judeo-Christianity. That is, that they're going. That's why they've been prompting, and poking the Muslims and in the sense of funding the school systems that they have that get them to hate the Jews and stuff like that, which is all done through the UNWRC or however you said it, Works Relief, whatever agency. That's why, through the Catholic Church, they're kind of wearing the mask of the Christians there, and then of course through America, which will, it's more the control of the Jewish government in the same way they control the American government, and the control of basically the Islamic world. They can create a war there that when it's destroyed, and my personal
the
opinion
John
is that it
King
would be...
John King Radio Show, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I didn't do that. So go ahead.
Okay. So I think that that war is going to happen. It might not be exactly like that. It might not be the some great thing like that. I don't want to try to push that too hard because I don't really know the dynamics of the war or whatever. But I do think it's going to be necessary for it to be extreme. It's necessary for it to be very, very brutal, and also it needs to look on the surface like it's fulfilling Bible prophecy. I think that they will do stuff like have Russia be brought into it. I think that China will have a role. And I think that this is all stuff that can be very you know, very easily manipulated by what we would call the New World Order. I mean, they called George Bush Sr., his name was Magog. That shows to me an understanding of this particular kind of Bible prophecy. And that is that, you know, it says, you know, I will put hooks in your jaws and I will, you know, bring you against Israel. And that God apparently destroys this whole onslaught of this Russian and Syrian sort of group or whatever. And anyway, it would be very easy to manipulate from a geopolitical standpoint, even if it wasn't quite perfect. And the benefit of that is that if it could be stopped, if this war could be stopped in the fields of Megiddo, then you would make it look like whoever stopped this war that came down from the clouds would be Jesus. I mean, there would hardly be a Christian in the world that would say that was Jesus. I mean, here he is. He stopped this war. You know, I mean, if you listen to Fox News or, you know, whatever, this is all, this is, they'll play this up like this is, you know, the real deal, you know. Here it is. And I say towards the end of this, and Jesus goes into quite a bit of discussion at this, but he ends, or doesn't, ends with this basic idea. He says, and if any man shall say, lo, here is Christ, or lo, he is there, believe him not. For false Christs and false prophets shall rise and show signs and wonders to seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. But take ye, and so he goes on in different places to describe this great deception. I think that this deception is going to be much bigger than we give it credit for. I think a lot of Christians believe, hey, you know, I'm going to know what's going to happen. There's going to be an Antichrist, and I'm going to know it's the Antichrist. I'm not going to take the mark. It's going to be easy, and then Jesus is going to come back. I don't think it's going to be that easy. I think that the problem is, this is where it gets confusing, and well, I don't know if it's confusing. It makes it click a little bit. My admonition to people is that even the average zeitgeist believer, 9/11 truther, who is spending his night burning DVDs trying to fight the New World Order, he too will believe this is the return of Christ, but not in the Bible kind of way. And the reason is because I think that whoever this guy is going to essentially claim the zeitgeist kind of line, which is that, hey, look, I am the Jesus, but I'm also Buddha. I'm also Krishna. I've been the same guy the whole time. I keep coming back at various times to kind of set you guys straight. And here you guys are messing up with these wars. You're about to destroy yourselves. We, or whatever I am, I created you. And this is, you know, this is all sort of my thing. So, you know, I'm here to stop you. All the religions are whatever, you know, correct. I think that there's going to be an alien connection, but that's just beside the point. I think that there's going to be some sort of tie-in to people believing that this is somehow aliens from another planet or something like that. Because if they can do that, then that's one of the triggers that I think is really important, which is it gets the world to reject God. And that's one of the big parts of what happens there is they not only reject God because we've been trained to believe, illogically I might add, that if aliens show up, then that means that God doesn't exist. And while I think that aliens, what we experience as aliens, are demonic in nature, I don't discount the possibility of other life forms necessarily. I mean, the Bible doesn't discount them. It's just, I mean, God could do that if he wanted to. It's not like it would hold him, no one would hold him back, you know. But at the same time, what we do experience, I think, can be demonstrated to be demonic. So my point is here that the world is going to believe immediately in the presence of aliens that God doesn't exist. So they will be justified in the next move, which is to believe that they are gods via the idea that's been implanted to us very subtly through Zachariah Sitchin and other people. Again, this is kind of the background noise of the truth movement, this idea that if we were created by basically more advanced people, then that means that we can also evolve to that a level of advancement. And if we can evolve to that level of advancement, it essentially means that we are our own gods. That is that, you know, those aliens that came back and saved us from our thing and have a lot of technology and that seeded mankind. And that would, of course, give all the evolutionists a good reason to rejoice because they finally don't have to explain DNA. So they're all happy. The scientists are all happy. They have a reason to finally, I mean, Dawkins in the Ben Stein movie, that's what he said. Like, well, yeah, there could be intelligent design as long as it was from aliens. I mean, this is where this is going, in my opinion, because that gives them they get to finally say, okay, yeah, you're right, intelligent designers, you're right, and God doesn't exist. That's the problem with the intelligent design things, that ultimately it's going to be used against people, in my opinion. So those things will happen immediately at the presence of angels. We'll hate God, believe ourselves to be God. And then the third thing that also happens with aliens, that we will believe that it's possible for us to evolve to something more like them, which will be physically different. Possibly they'll show some sort of signs they can do mentally or whatever. So we'll believe that we can turn into something like that. And I'm guaranteeing you will be saying that you are at this very important time in history where some of you are going to evolve into something like us, but some of you aren't. But you guys just witnessed this huge bloody war where the Christians and the Jews and the Muslims were all fighting because they believe this Bible. Some of them believe this kind of Bible, and other ones believe this Bible. But that's your problem. These are the people that they're not ready to evolve. I mean, they're just still doing their thing. And a lot of them will actually, of course, at that time believe in this whole new thing. Except there's going to be one pesky little group of Christians that's going to be like, nah, this is not true. You know, this is wrong. You guys are wrong. And the Bible said this. This is exactly what it was saying. There's going to be even a minority amount of the Christians, I mean, are going to be saying that. Those that are, you know, well, just by the grace of God, that are going to be doing that. And so those people will be viewed by the media, by everything else, very logically, I might add. If I believed what was going on at that point, what the news media was telling me, what this whole situation happening, this weird situation, I too would believe that the Christians would have to be eliminated. Because if you really look into the 2012 stuff, that's what you're going to find every time. The people that you think are just so, whoa, so peaceful and new agey, and they just want, you know, everybody to be enlightenment and do love, and you know, everything's great. What the problem is that very subtly their undertones are, in this new enlightenment, Christians have to be eliminated. There has to be genocide. It's the only way. And some of them will absolutely say it. And that's the scary thing, that when you really look at 2012 enlightenment, it's a control of a totalitarian government bigger than anyone that's ever been formed, with the motive and power to wipe a certain group of religion off the face of the planet. So that is why 2012 can be, if all of that stuff is in any way true, very dangerous.
I have to agree with you there, and I think that is a fantastic theory on how things will go. And I too believe that aliens in some – the alien agenda in some way or another has to be connected, because that is the one thing that is outside of religion, but at the same time could connect itself to religion, or even say that religion is the problem – that would fool, or could fool, even the elect, as it says. It's just the only, you know, I've spent quite a bit of time racking my brain on what it could be, you know, because I spend a lot of time on preparation and getting ready for having to be here in case the rapture doesn't happen like it says. And so, you know, I want to be aware. I want, you know, my little girl and my wife and the rest of my family and friends, I want to make sure that we make it. So, you know, looking, it seems that even in the case of, I think that they could pull off a false rapture, and to explain even the real rapture. I like your analogy of that, too. I really think that is real close to how the alien agenda will fit in. Why don't you describe that a little bit for folks? Because it's more your idea than mine.
What about the rapture, you mean?
The alien agenda and how it might possibly, how they might have a false rapture, and then the explanation for the real rapture that could come from that.
Right. Well,
because that is some fantastic theorizing right there.
There's a lot of debate on that, and I think that I personally think that having a true false rapture with Blue Beam Project or whatever is not possible. I don't think the infrastructure is there. I think that they could do something like that. I don't think it's in the cards, though. But the only reason I think that it's a possibility is because when you really look into what if you get into like what the demons are saying to the people that are channeling them and talking about 2012, almost without exception, they are talking about this. This event where a lot of the ones that aren't ready to be enlightened are going to be taken away. And so, and some of them say to be prepared so that they can, you know, be enlightened later on or go to basically a school, is what a lot of them describe it as. Peter Goodgame has done a lot of work in collecting a lot of the channel information that's talking about basically a rapture. But what's in, and I know there was one lady that we've interviewed, her name is Lynn, and she had the same, she was in very close contact with demons. She believed that they were angels, and she was doing a lot of Reiki and stuff, and they were very, really interesting story with her. But she was always told that this rapture thing would be the reversed, that it was the ones that essentially we would call the New Age gurus. They were going to be raptured, and the Christed ones, I think is what they call them, would not be, or you know, some kind of a reversal of roles there. I don't know. I don't know what's going to go on, but I do think that I think that the rapture is what, if Satan was still, like we said, Satan thinking about this, you know, the whole time, how is, if he reads in the Bible that there is a rapture, it doesn't really matter when the rapture happens. He's still got to keep people in line to the very end in this, and the rapture poses an extreme threat to him in that it has to be explained. He has to have something in place to be able to say, well, well, I know that just happened. I understand. A lot of people just left, but this is why. And without that, he's running a major risk of this whole thing falling apart. I mean, he's got too much time and money invested in this thing to let it fall apart because he hadn't thought ahead to think of an explanation for what the Bible clearly says is going to happen. And again, regardless of the time frame, which I personally view the time frame to be pre-wrath, and I can show you really quick why it makes all the sense in the world. A lot of the reason that people think that it'll be pre-wrath or pre-trib or post-trib are actually are both right, and the problem is that they both have enough about the opposing view to point at them and genuinely say that they're wrong because of this thing or that thing. But the issue is that they're both, it's just about the definition of one little word that changes everything and makes it all fall into place, in my opinion. But yeah, we can finish up here if you want to.
Awesome. I have a caller in queue. He's been waiting about 20 minutes. Would you like to take a caller, and then we'll go into, well, let's take the caller first, and then we'll finish up
sure.
Kind of like we did last time. All right,
okay.
Hold on. Let me bring him on right now. All right, Shepard, you're live with Chris and Doc. Go ahead and state your question, man.
Hey, Doc, how's it going? Hey, Chris, I myself, you know, I tuned in kind of late, so I don't know what all you guys were talking about, but I myself kind of believe the 2012 thing is a bunch of hype and kind of a deception, but I was thinking about something. Planet X actually, to me, has a lot of credibility, and I believe it's a totally separate event from 2012. And, you know, I don't know when Planet X might be coming in or not, but my what question I have basically is, do you think that they would hype the events of 2012 knowing that Planet X is potentially going to swing by and cause disaster and stuff and actually kind of blame it on 2012 as like a false flag? That way it would kind of
cover up
the passing of the planet.
Well, I think there's something to what you're saying there. I don't think it's Planet X. I don't think it's a planet. I don't think it's a star. I think there's lots of good reasons why it's not. But the idea that you have there is something that's always bugged me, honestly, is that idea in that Zachariah Sitchin, we were talking a lot about this earlier in the show. We talked about Zachariah Sitchin and why it's not possible, why the Planet X thing was probably in the first place. It had a lot to do, in my opinion, with just lots of different things if you get a chance to listen to it. But one of the things that I always thought about with Zachariah Sitchin is that I honestly do believe Zachariah Sitchin was a knowing misinformation agent. This has a lot to do with my view on Arizona Wilder's testimony and different things like that, his evidence itself.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is really a disinformation agent of the level that I think that he is, then he would actually have access to probably some old data or something like that. And it's possible that one thing, if he was right about just one thing, it wouldn't have to be a planet. It would just have to be anything anomalous. If he was right about anything, it would give it some sort of credibility, and therefore give him credibility. And that stuck into my mind. After knowing all the stuff that you know, I know about Planet X, and if you get a chance to see the video that I did called the 2012 presentation. Excuse me, it's a 2012 deception presentation, mm-hmm. and also there's a video that I just did on Greg Braden called Greg Braden Debunked. And I go through all of that in great detail. Also, there's another movie that I did called 2012 Debunked, where I go through the various details about Planet X in there too. So there's lots and lots of reasons to think that it's not the case. And just in the course of the time, we won't go into it all right now. But I do think that what you're essentially saying is a possibility.
Okay. Yeah. I've been thinking about that myself lately. It would be a good way for them to mask the passing of the planet as these events are happening. And you know what? The New World Order could almost use that to their advantage, claiming its biblical prophecies coming true, and biblical prophecies could be a little farther down the road even.
Sure. Well, yeah, and make sure, or if you get a chance to anyway, at least check out the 2012 Debunked movie. It's about less than 20 minutes long, and it'll definitely explain a lot of the Planet X stuff too.
Okay,
yeah, we covered a whole bunch of – we actually covered all those points earlier in the show as well. And we got about 8 minutes to go, and I have a couple more questions for Mr. White. So I'm gonna let you go, Shep. Feel free to call in any time, my man.
Yep.
Thanks for calling.
All right. So here we are now. We've gone through pretty much everything there is to the 2012 deception, and it leads me right back to here. What is it that you recommend to everyone so that they will know the difference between the false teaching that's coming and the real teaching, the real truth that they're going to have to know to save themselves from what's coming?
Well, I think the thing is that you have to be in Christ. You have to have him and be walking with him. I mean, he's still a teacher. He still is teaching this to this day. I mean, he is. But and if you have a personal relationship with him, you have this God-given discernment. I would say just, you know, that's the main thing. If you have him and you have enough of him to where you're on fire for him, you want to read what he's about. You want to figure out what he was trying to say. Just realize how important it is, you know. If you have any doubts about, let's say, whether or not the Bible can be trusted or anything, look into it. I encourage everyone to just really, really dig to find the truth. As we've looked and looked, there's so much misinformation about Jesus and about the Bible in the truth movement alone, let alone the rest of the world. It should point to the fact that it's extremely important. So, you know, put down the other books. Turn off the TV. Try to figure out what the God of the universe is trying to say. And do it with the light of the Holy Spirit guiding you. And you can't go wrong. Pray for wisdom. Pray for knowledge. God gives good gifts. He hears prayers. He hears those prayers. You pray for those kinds of things, he's going to grant you that prayer. And you're going to grow in knowledge of not just these kinds of things, what's going to happen in the future and what's not going to happen. And you're not going to just get discernment, but you're also going to be changed into somebody that is just full of joy and peace. It's the way to live. It's not just a book about the things that are cool. It's a life-changing book that transforms you into the way we should be. It's a guidebook for humanity. Read Jesus, what he said. Read the letters of Paul. Read this book, and you're going to be blessed for it. It makes explicit claims to that effect.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And I, like always, it's been a absolutely fantastic interview, Chris. And I can't wait to have you back again next month. I just have a great time with the topics and talking with you, man. So, again, thank you for coming. And give out your websites. And, of course, you have a conference coming up too. So tell folks about that real quick.
Sure, man. Thanks a lot, too. This has been, I mean, this is, like, really exciting. I don't know why. It's just such a fun time with you, and you're a really good interviewer. It seems to just fly by. But, yeah, the website's nowheretorunradio.com, 2012deception.net. Both of them are currently hacked and down right now, but You can go to the YouTube page, the YouTube user Nowhere to Run 1984, and that's it, man. Just glad to be here. Hope to see you soon.
All right, man. Thank you, and God bless, huh?
You too. Bye.
All right, folks. What an awesome interview. What an awesome interview. We are running short of time. I just want to tell you all, here is the actuality of it. If you have Jesus in your heart, if you've asked for Jesus to come in your heart, if you've admitted that you're a sinner and admitted that the only way to reach God is through Jesus, then God will give you the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit will come into your life, and you will know. It's just the Spirit will move you. The Spirit will move you to the truth. Trust me. God loves you, and He's not going to steer you wrong. So if when you run into a situation, especially what's coming, the first thing you should do is pray. Pray and ask for discernment, and ask the Holy Spirit to guide you. The Bible says very clearly in the end times, in the times to come, that the Holy Spirit will be there to guide you through those situations. Now, we're here on the precipice of the most amazing, epic, terrifying times to most. To someone without God, it would be utterly terrifying ever to take place in the history of the world. The one thing that you know you can do that will get you through is to trust in Jesus, trust in the Holy Spirit, and you will get to where you need to be, because the Lord gives you the Holy Spirit to guide you. So having said that, if any of you don't know the Lord out there, my email is doc@freedomizerradio.com. If you would like to get to know the Lord on a personal level, if you do not know God, you can email me. I'll give you my phone number, and we can do the whole thing together on the phone. So send me an email, and we'll do that. And for those of you that joined me tonight, I just want to say thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming out and making this an awesome show with has to be my favorite guest. And as usual, I'm going to end in my usual way. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you on the next round. God bless all of you.